Pittance Podcast is brought to you this week and every week by the Brainstorm Brewery. Okay, everybody. Before we get into this episode, I am going to have to apologize because, well, to be quite frank, this episode had a lot of audio problems, and it doesn't sound as well as I'd like, normally would like. So, even after multiple editing attempts, I was unable to make it sound better. I'm sorry. Try to do better next time. Hello and welcome to the Pit Imps Podcast, episode number 100-9. I am your self-absorbed host, Angelo, and I'm back this week with Will.
Those were very good adjectives, Angelo. I liked that.
And Ryan.
What up, what up?
So what's up, guys?
Shit.
There was a Magic tournament this weekend.
One really big Magic tournament this weekend.
I mean, you know, not really big. It's not, there weren't even 1,000 people there, were there?
No, but they gave out more money.
Money's good.
There was 356 of the world's finest players.
Yeah, and the sad thing is Guillaume just had travel issues, so he couldn't make it even for, you know, which is really a shame.
Well, already getting there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, that was my team.
Aside from that, you had a pretty good weekend.
Yeah, well, I guess, yeah, I did do lots of things. But we'll talk about all of that and so much more so much later. Day one starts of the Pro Tour, Cons with Harkir. And they do it right. They go, we're going to let you watch the number one and number two player in the world draft. So, excuse me. They start with Reed Duke, who, I mean, you want to talk about starting off a tournament right. He opens his first pack, and this is the first thing that they're showing on the fucking Pro Tour. And he's going through his pack, and he gets to his rare, and it's a Sorin.
Sorin.
Like, well, let's start this out with a bang. And I know these are open packs and everything, and, you know, they put the little things on them. But it makes you wonder sometimes when you start the tournament showing somebody, and he gets something like that.
A lot of people were crying conspiracy.
No, come on, man.
You know, I thought it for a second, but I was like, nah, I've seen a lot of tournaments where it just doesn't start this way. So,
yeah.
I mean, it just is what it is. His second pick, he went with a Bellowing Saddle Brute, which is the 4-5 for 4, but if you don't attack, you take 4 damage. That 4 damage seems really inconsequential.
I mean, normally you want to trigger raid with it. It's a great dude when you trigger raid. He's just the biggest guy on any curve.
Right.
But, you know, if you take 4 life for him, whatever, he's going to block that much more.
Right, he's still not bad. He's just not as good as he could have been. But he did take his third pick, which I found this one a little bit odd. He took a Chief of the Edge over a Ghostfire Blade.
That is really odd. Ghostfire Blade, one of the better cards in all of the set for limited, as my understanding is.
It is. I'm thinking what happened was he opened the sword and he saw the black white and he goes, I just need to go black white.
Yeah, I need to be the guy in black white. I want to cut every single black white card. If someone sees any black card white cards to my left, they're going to think it's open.
Right, and a card like Chief to the Edge will give that impression.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It's really a shame he had to hand over a Ghostfire Blade. And then pick 4, he goes Dead Drop. Which, I mean, as much as I don't like the actual construction of the card, it's not what the card does, it's not how powerful it is, it's just the actual construction of the card. I'm just like, it seems wonky.
Climbing on a lot of people's radars.
It's good.
It's super good. I mean, even at 5 mana on turn 7, sacrificing two creatures is real, like, so good in the late game, and a lot of the games get late.
Oh, no, I agree completely. I mean, I even said when I said it was the worst card in the set that it wasn't because I wasn't going to play it or lose to it.
Yeah.
You know, like, I knew that was going to happen.
Yeah.
It's just, and there's something about the card when I just look at it, I don't know, I'm just like, I don't like how that is.
Hurt. So, it's a 10-mana sorcery. Who the fuck wants that in their deck?
Yeah, just something about that maybe is what's rubbing me wrong, because it's clearly not the dude falling into the alligators.
Right, those are sweet.
And then he got a Blossoming Sands.
Fine fixing.
Sure. And then pack 2, the rest of the pack was pretty much filler. Pack 2, he got a Chief of the Scale, pack 1, pick 1.
All right. I mean, if you're trying to cut white-black, that's what you want. That's what you're looking for.
Well, I mean, he got the Chief of the Edge, and he got the Chief of the Scale. I mean, when both of them are in play, it's pretty powerful.
No doubt.
Then he gets handed a Grim Horror Specs.
That card's awesome.
Oh, my God. Is it like
such a blowout morph trick. Like, even when it's not in combat, that's I think, when it's the best, when you just, like, hard cast, and then the morph cost is one. So, you know, you can just, like, attack into combat with your other dudes and get the cards. It's pretty sweet. Right.
It's like, I don't care if things die. Who cares? Yeah. Roxasa's Seeker at 3. 4 was another Bellowing Saddle Brute. This is going to become a theme. And 5, Smite the Monstrous. And then pack 3, pick 1, Bellowing Saddle Brute.
3 of those in your deck is pretty spicy.
It is. That's a lot of good 4 drops. 2 was a Suspension Field.
That's one of the better removal cards.
Yeah, and he really needed it at that point. Like, his removal was not the best. I mean, like, he had the dead drop, but short of that, he really didn't have anything.
There are so many cards that are very threatening that you just need to have some answers, and no matter what deck you're playing.
Right, and this gives him his early game removal where, you know, the dead drop is clearly his late game. He got a Kiru Bloodsucker 3rd pick, and a Despise 4th pick, and then another Blossoming Sands.
How much do you like the Bloodsucker? I'm not quite sure how to evaluate him.
I've been in a couple decks where I thought he was good, and I've been in a couple decks where I just didn't care for him.
Yeah, like, there is definitely the black-green toughness deck. It's, you know, one of the two-color decks you can draft, and he's sweet in that, but...
He's really good in a heavy Outlast deck.
Yeah, that would be the other place, I think, to put him, because you get the counters to get the triggers, and, you know.
And that helps the Kiru Bloodsucker. He also, as a notable pick, during Pack 2, he got handed a pick 7 Armament Core.
That's an awesome card.
Yeah, 7th pick.
Yeah, it's one of the better Abzan cards.
But then after that, they went to Jeremy Dazani, who picks a Misfire Weaver to start everything off.
It's a fine morph. I think that the Shroud on a morph is pretty good. It gets a lot of debilitating injuries.
Yes. I think his better pick, though, was his 2nd pick of Pack 1, where he got the Ice Feather Aven.
Card is dominant. I swear to you, it's hard to lose drafts when you play that guy.
It is really good. 3 Opulent Palace, 4 Bear's Companion.
Card is
which awesome. Was a little different.
Card's so good.
You noticed very early on watching these pros draft that there was a lot of 3 color on clan cards, like, you know, Bear's Companion and the Ponyback Brigade and things like that, just going around.
People afraid to commit. People,
right.
You know, wanting to make sure their deck is solid before they dip their toe into something that could potentially be a wasted pick.
Yeah, it turned out for a lot of them, it was like Pack 3 was when they was grabbing
them. Yeah, exactly. It's funny how you see the cards change their value in the different packs. You know, like, obviously when I know I'm in, you know, Mardu, the Ponyback Brigade is like a pick 2 or pick 3 card, you know, but, in Pack 1, you know, I'm going to hold off and see if it tables.
Right. I agree. Although, you know, I don't know. I've had success myself jumping in early, and I'm not fighting late.
Yeah, it all depends. And, like, it's funny. There are so many different strategies you can try in this draft format that are all successful. It's a great, great format. Right. Very deep.
Pick 5 of Pack 1, Scion of Glaciers, and very good card.
I've been very impressed with that card.
My only issue with that card is when you look at it, you think it has flying.
Well, you know.
And it doesn't.
Let your opponents think that, too.
Right. So then Pack 2, he, you know, gets rewarded by getting a Monkey Knuckle.
Oh, baby. Monkey Knuckle's pretty good.
Yes, it is. 2nd pick, Avalanche Tusker.
I think that guy's good. I haven't gotten to play him too much. I've cut him a couple times, but, you know, he's good.
He's a good curve topper in that deck.
He only costs 5, and he rumbles with everything, even after it morphs up, aside from, like, a couple, you know, like, 1 or 2 guys. The fact that he has 6 power is notable because he attacks through the blue 06 guy, who can be a real problem.
Right. Yeah. Thornwood Falls 3rd, so, like, he really was on the first few picks. You know, with the Opulent Palace 3rd, Thornwood Falls 3rd. Excuse me. That's what he wanted to do. Then he got a Crippling Chill. Crippling Chill's really good. Lock that down. Goodbye.
Yeah, I don't know how much... I think it's worse in Teemer than it is in like, the Jeskai list, but it's not bad.
I think it's good in Teemer as well. Just that, you know, stopping something for a turn, their big thing that can actually block, like, it...
See, I don't know,
better in Jeskai because you don't mind doing it on their turn as much.
Yeah. I just... I I like in Teemer, I like Savage Punch more, and the one card that it's like a lure that gives him indestructible. You know, I prioritize
resistance, right?
No, not the white one, the green one. It's like a ferocious card. If you're ferocious, your lure creature gets
That card is pretty beastly.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you're talking about. I can't think of the name of it. And then with his fifth pick, he did get the best. The best two drop in the set, I think. Heir of the Wilds.
Close. I think Seeker of the Way is better.
Do you?
Yeah, I do.
Death Dealer.
Well, I mean, okay, it's a rare. That's fair.
When typically I say like in the format of like limited, I'm talking mainly with your drafts, with your commons and uncommons.
Yeah.
Because you're only going to see a few rares.
Death Dealer's a freak.
Yeah. But I'll give you that.
He's very, very good.
So then pack three comes to him, and he's like, I'm going to crack this fucker open, and he opens it up and says, hey, I got a second Avalanche Tusker. Thump.
You know, at that point in time, I actually would have tried to make that table if I was him. I think that there were no other Teemer drafters at the table when I watched that. He was able to table the 5-5 Trample guy, the Morph guy. So
oh, yeah.
I would try and table the Avalanche Tusker, too. I think there's a 60% chance that gets back to him or higher.
I really think there is. Kind of going off of what you were saying, just to kind of prove the thing, as a notable pick in pack one, he got a 13th pick Bear's Companion.
That's insane. That card is so sick.
And he got in the second pack, he got a 9th pick Savage Punch and an 11th pick Snow.
Yeah, exactly. Like these
right. There was no king.
I mean, I would have taken a gamble and tried to table that, but I mean, it's fine. He ended up getting a fine 9th pick anyway.
Right. I mean, he could have very easily probably gotten that to table, and the draft went well for him. There's no way around it. Like, I looked at his deck when it was over, and I was like, holy fuck. Like, the only way he can lose is the mana, and that, you know, it happens. Thornwood falls second. Again, really prioritizing his mana fixing. Teemer Ascendancy third. That's pretty good with this deck, huh?
That card's very good when you can play it. I've had a lot of success.
Rugged Highlands 4, more fixing. And then he decided he was not going to splash third color to run Butcher.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting because the guy next to him got a sick mark.
He has to splash two colors.
Yeah, but it's Butcher.
Yeah, I know, man. But Butcher's not that sweet. Not when like most of his guys are just bigger than it anyway. Like it doesn't regenerate, right?
No, but it flies.
Yeah, I get that. But he should be able to erase it.
He passed a lot of sweet Mardu stuff, though. Ponyback Brigade.
You're gonna pass sweet stuff in this format. There's sweet stuff in all the colors, and it's three colors. So you know, just like the chances of him playing that guy are 1 in 7 in the first round, and then after that, it gets skewed one way or the other.
Yeah, he did take an Alpine Grizzly over it.
Alpine Grizzly is one of the better cards for Teemer. You just want to be ferocious as quickly as possible.
Turns on your Savage Punch very early in the game.
It is one of the better Savage Punch carriers. Like, if you can Savage Punch and any 2-drop on turn 4 with your Alpine Grizzlies, you are very far ahead in the game.
Yeah, it's very important to get that Savage Punch turned on early, and a lot of times you'll play a Bear and you'll let a 2-2 Morph swing through, and you're just like,
You're gonna swing through, that's great. You're gonna play another Morph, I don't care. I have a trick for my turn when I attack.
Right. So that was that thing. And then he got an 8th pick, Icy Blast. How that happens, I have no clue.
Icy Blast is a really good card.
How does that happen 8th? Like, there was no other blue drafters at the table.
Well, if I'm a Jeskai deck, I might prioritize a dude higher than that, or maybe a Mana Fixer. And if I'm a Sultai drafter, I really don't want that card. So, you know.
I don't know. Like, if I'm a Jeskai player, I want Icy Blast.
It's hard to argue, but, I mean, I didn't see the pack. You know?
Yeah. And then he got a Teemer Charm. 10th.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, again.
It's what you expect.
With the previous results, it is kind of what you expect. Round one starts, and they do put Dazani on camera. And he goes up against Seth Mansfield's Jeskai deck. Dazani kept a one-land hand and hits two lands in a row, so then it's pretty good at that point, but then he stalls at 3. And Seth Mansfield, Weapons Master.
That card's good.
Clears the board, and Dazani dies with both of his Tuskers and Companion in his hand.
Yeah, I think that's a sketchy keep. They talked about his rationale. I think he had 19 lands in his deck. So he said he's like 50% to hit everyone thereafter. He's like higher than 50% to hit actually on everyone thereafter based on odds.
Right.
So, I mean, I understand his reasoning, and you know, when you look good doing something like that, you look really good, but
when you look bad, it does look bad.
Yeah. I don't ever keep a one land hand. I have a hard time keeping two land hands.
I keep twos pretty consistently.
It depends. I don't draw third lands as much as a lot of other people do. So.
You know, I kind of adhere to the don't fear the two land hand thing.
Well, my testing results have proven that I need a different opinion.
Okay.
Dude, watch my replays on Magic Online. I will show you. Like,
dude, I'm not going to say I've never been burnt by it. I'm just saying, like, I usually don't fear. In this format, it's been like, it has to be two, but one of them has to be a duel. Because yeah. I'm in them three colors.
On the draw two, or, you know, I draft a lot of two-color aggro decks, and even then I'm still kind of scared to take two landers.
So game two, Dazani gets a bit of a better start as far as lands go. Yet he still stalls at four. Mansfield plays a set adrift to stop him from getting his fifth mana, and this actually was the play of the game. Like, it put him back just enough. Plays a Bear's Companion, Dazani attacks with everything, flips his morph where, if he wouldn't have done that, he would have won, if he would have kept the creature back. But then the Weapon Master flips, and the Mantis Rider is played for lethal on the next turn, because the Weapons Master gives +3/+0 to something, and it has First Strike. So then, you know, he does his blocks, and then he just kind of goes, all right, I'm going to play this Mantis Rider next turn. Can I see your hand? Oh, okay, yeah, thank you. Unfortunately, the Craig West goes, Stanislav Sivka, second match, I watched four times. Every time, didn't get any notes on it. I'm a little lacking on notes this time. If any,
so,
you have anything
as I recall, Wesco was on a five-color deck, and Sivka, I want to say, was on a two-color aggro. Either that or he was on some kind of... He was definitely on an aggro list.
Yeah.
But Wesco had a bunch of blockers, and I'm pretty sure... Sivka won, though, because he ended the weekend 6-0 in draft.
So. Yeah, Sivka did win.
Guys, for the spoiler.
Yeah, whoops. And the third round, I just completely missed. I never got to catch it. It was a weird weekend for me, which I'll explain later. So then we moved, after three rounds of limited Magic, we moved to Standard, where I believe Will used Friday Standard guy, right?
Yeah. Okay, I have a quick aside here.
Okay.
I took notes on all four of the matches in every round that I was supposed to do. Do you want me to do all that, or just one, the feature match in each round?
Just do the feature match in each round.
Okay.
Because that would get things crazy.
Yeah, I have a lot of notes. I have 6 pages of notes.
Holy balls.
You said to be prepared. All right. So in round four, the first round of Standard, our feature match was Ben Stark versus Raphael Levy. Ben Stark was playing on a Jeskai Winds list, and Raphael Levy was on a Mardu Planeswalkers. Game one, there was a little bit of exchange. Turn four, Raphael Levy resolves a Chandra for several turns. However, Ben is able to burn it out and then attacks. Elspeth, however, makes tokens, ends the game in pretty quick fashion from there, as Ben is not able to get through the large loyalty on her. Game two, Ben has several early dudes to start the game, in addition to, I believe it was a Seeker of the Ways followed by Goblin Rabblemaster. Well, they were able to be killed by one-for-one removal spells. Levy has two of the sheep cards to hide behind to sustain his life total. However, Ben is able to top deck two Goblin Rabblemasters. Actually, he doesn't top deck, and he gets them off a dig through time. And they are able to just go crazy for about three turns, making a whole bunch of tokens, and then Sarkhan Fault shows up to deal the last four. So in the final game, the Seeker of the Way faces off against two sheep, just gaining life and keeping the game at parity, while then a second Seeker for Ben with a handful of gas off of several dig-through times, ends up negating an Elspeth, follows it up with a Mantis Rider, and uses a Jeskai Tarm to repel the sheep to the top of the library, is able to squeeze through just enough for lethal to take that match in his favor.
What is a Jeskai Tarm?
It's basically Boros Charm and Is It Charm fucked.
It's very...
Right, I know what the charms are, but I'm trying to figure out what a Tarm is.
Charm?
You said Tarm.
Shit, I did.
At least that's how it came through my headset.
Get fucked.
I didn't hear Tarm, Will. I didn't hear Tarm.
It's cool. Thanks, man. I probably said Tarm. It's okay.
I'm just busting your balls, man. We gotta have some fun with this. This is gonna be a long episode.
I know it is. So, round five, our feature match was Sean McLaren, also on the Jeskai list, although notably different than, the Ben Stark version.
Yeah, he had more of a burn version, right?
Right, it's really heavy burn in the main game, or in the main deck, with only one Secret of the Way and a higher reliance on, he actually has board sweeps through Anger of the Gods, and just a higher reliance on Dig Through Time in the late game. And then his sideboard is actually quite a bit different. It's very transformational. He boards into a Keranos package with up to eight, or nine counter spells.
Right, it changes into like a straight up control deck.
Yeah,
it's really cool.
Yeah, so which is great because then you have, you know, when you have a transformational sideboard, it gives you play in all three games, which is awesome. So he was facing up against Peter Stina, I think that would be how you pronounce that, with a Kung Fu Tokens list, as he called it in his deck tech.
Ooh, I did see the deck tech. Yeah, I like that deck.
Yeah, I mean it.
I like both of these decks, to be honest with you.
No doubt. I think that actually Hordling Outburst did a lot of work on the weekend, and you know, the fact that there just aren't a lot of sweepers makes the token strategy pretty good. Plus, this Jeskai Ascendancy thing is actually a pretty real card, turns out, and everything it does is just like very high value.
Right.
So Stina starts off game one with Hordling Outburst to get his tokens going. However, Sean McLaren, his Mantis Rider gives zero fucks about small ground men, flies over for about 12 damage through the course of the game, and then he's able to finish it off with a couple of burn spells. Game two, Stina, again, he actually starts it off with a sheep, and I'm sorry, I don't know the actual name of the sheep. I just wrote it down, but the life
the ram.
The ram, Nyxfleece Ram, there you go.
There you go.
And, so he starts off turn two Nyxfleece Ram into turn three Hordling Outburst. However, Sean McLaren actually just plays Anger of Gods to one for one the red token maker, and he then plays Rabble Masters of his own while Stina gets to work with an Ascendancy. My writing is also very bad. So Stina actually, he's pinched on mana. He only has three land in play for about three turns, which is very unfortunate for him because he's drawn multiple triplicate spirits in this time. But by the time he's able to get the six mana to resolve them, Sean McLaren has already cast Dig Through Time and has two dissolves in hand. So after this whole thing happens, he just plays a couple of Mantis Riders, activates Jeskai Charm for lifelink, and +1/+1 all his guys goes from 6 to 20 or so, and then he's just able to stay alive long enough to draw enough Stoke the Flames. So Sean McLaren takes it down 2-0 pretty convincingly.
Yeah, I caught that one for sure. I do remember everything you said. Like was like, oh, I remember all of this. Good match. I really do like the Jeskai decks right now. Like they're all very interesting, and there's like four different ones.
Yeah, I think that the difference in ways you can build to customize is going to keep it pretty live throughout the season, because individually any of the builds could very well be just, you know, crushed by the correct cards. So
yeah, you could prepare for either one of the correct builds. The only problem is they can be so changed that it's like, did you get the right one?
Notably, in this round, we also got to watch Park Jun-young playing against Odin Turtonwall. He resolved a giant Empty the Pits for, I believe, X was 10 or 12.
X was 10!
Yeah, it was pretty...
X was 10!
Pretty spicy.
Because...
So, on to round six, we had a pretty sweet feature.
I immediately was on Facebook like, well, that was a... did you lose, Will?
You didn't lose.
I got out for a second. I don't know.
Okay, you got real quiet.
It was, well, I had some delay on your mic. I've had that a couple times already tonight.
Bad.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to work through it.
Okay.
So, round six, we had old John Finkel, a guy of pretty moderate Pro Tour success in the past, versus Yuya Watanabe, also not a slouch at all. So John Finkel was on another version of Jeskai Wins, and Yuya was on a green-black devotion list. Actually, I have that the wrong way around. Finkel was on green-black devotion, and Yuya was on Jeskai.
Yeah, Yuya was on Jeskai.
Yeah, I apologize. So Yuya begins the game with an early Rabble Master in game one, and Finkel gets the typical Caryatid Courser start. So you think he's in pretty good shape. However, Yuya just resolves a Sarkhan to -3 to kill the Courser, plays a second Rabble Master, and then Sarkhan +1s the next turn for lethal because the there are a whole lot of tokens and giant goblins in play.
Mm-hmm.
Game two, Finkel just mulled to five. Pretty marginal hand. Thought seizes, turn one, takes away a Magma Jet, hoping to pinch Yuya on land, and then plays a Satyr, Voyaging Satyr on turn two. However, by that point in time, Yuya had drawn a second Magma Jet, and then a turn three Rabblemaster was able to just do some work for several turns.
So, just to, you know, explain to the listeners, when you say pinch them by land, you mean take away those scry triggers from the Magma Jet?
Yeah, Magma Jet. Well, I mean, I guess it was less about mana at that point in time and more to protect his Satyr, I apologize.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, I wanted to protect his own Satyr, and unfortunately gets the second Magma Jet, and then Rabblemaster goes to work. Turn four was Brimaz, and turn five was Sarkhan. It was pretty one-sided.
That sounds it.
Yeah.
You say Brimaz into Sarkhan, like, well, I just think, yeah, you're dead.
Rabblemaster was still on the board at this point in time.
Yeah. So you're saying Rabblemaster into Brimaz into Sarkhan.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, you're dead.
It was pretty ugly. Well, and I mean, you know, just Finkel didn't get there on his draw, mull to five, and, you know, it's just not how you want to do it.
Right.
Going on to round seven, the feature match was David Williams versus Fabian Tila. David Williams was on the Channel Fireballs version of the Ascendancy combo. They opted for the Altar of the Brood finish, or Altar of the Brood, right?
Yeah.
And then Fabian Tila was on Kriegren Monsters, an extremely interactive deck, as we all know.
It's interactive. I play big guy. Block.
So, game one, Williams just had a pretty sweet one. Turn two, Rattleclaw Mystic. Turn three, Caryatid. Turn four, Ascendancy combo outs for the victory. So they had some lives. All he actually did was he targeted, or he played the zero mana cost Astral Cornucopia, targeted his Sylvan Caryatid with his Retracting Helix, and that resulted in a concession. So
game, that makes sense.
Game two, Tila, he gets a serious draw for the green-red deck. He is able to resolve a turn four Hornet Queen, which is, you know, really good. Had a Xenagos in play early. However, Williams, he just patiently Tygon schemed his way to the pieces of his puzzle and played a turn five Ascendancy for the win. Made him go through the motions, and sure enough, on turn five or six, whenever Tila went to draw his cards, he did not have any. So that was how that match happened.
He did not have any.
He had none of the cards. Really good sport about it, you know, like losing to a cheesy combo deck on your feature match. You know, it's a bummer, but
was that the combo with the Altar of the Brood? Is that what it was?
Yeah, their combo decision was to play the zero mana Astral Cornucopia Retraction Helix Mana Dude Altar of the Brood 4-card combo kill.
Yeah, and that kill was a mill kill, correct?
Correct. Yeah. You Altar the Brood is whenever you play a permanent card, you may, or all of your opponents, each mill one card. So when you have this Retraction Helix loop with your zero mana guy, it's non-terminating if you wish it to be. So
we gave this card a very bad review, Angelo.
I mean, I knew something was going to happen with it, but this is just more of Ascendancy being bonkers.
Altar of the Brood, it's a bad card, yeah, but Ascendancy is really good.
Yeah, Ascendancy, I mean,
there are other decks that win without it. Really, at any point in time, you have these Ascendancy loop going, it's lethal. You could even choose to just deal lethal with creatures once you have your Retraction Helix loop going, because you can just infinitely bounce their blockers.
Right.
But this is, you know, the smallest combination. It actually allows you to lean heavily on Caryatid, which the other versions don't. So
Well, the other one really needs Caryatid also.
Well, they both do, but
you definitely want a Twin Flame to Caryatid.
That is a fine target, but they all work. You actually, you know, in the other versions, a lot of times you're forced to attack for the combo without.
It's just the creative hexproof. So
right, yeah.
Hexproof is what protects the combo.
Yeah. But that one doesn't have the other versions don't have as many of the zero casting cost artifacts, so they can't theoretically go as infinite with their loop, do they?
Well, they still play Briber's Proof. curse.
Okay, they do have the full retraction helix loop. They just kill with the tap, the ping spell, or whatever.
Well, Nissa, and they got a, you know, dragon mantle.
Yeah, Nissa, dragon mantle, really big trampler land.
My goodness, that's awful. That's like a giant package. That's like
four. That's one of them. Another one was the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't
know. There was a few different ones, but they were all, I mean, that is a combo card. Like, it,
yeah,
just Jeskai Ascendancy is like, build around me, please.
Yep. I didn't realize the power level of it. It's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, I thought that it was good. I just didn't think that it was, that it set up this many combos. Like, I saw the use in modern. I did not think that in standard it would be crazy.
No, Megan on Friday lost to it. Megan lost to it playing modern on Friday. Some guy on turn two.
There are a lot of ways.
10 minutes where he made a giant.
There are ways to fight it. You just Erase is really good. If you have Carry Tizzy, your own Bile Blight's actually a live answer to a lot of the stuff. You know, discards is pretty reasonable as well. Just basically any way you can attack their mana dwarfs.
So Megan lost to it in modern. Ugh. That's
tough.
Like
modern?
Yeah,
I mean modern. It's that, you know, you need
it's good.
A different set of hate cards altogether.
Right.
Yeah,
it's really good in modern. So continue on, Will.
Yeah, absolutely. We go to round 8, the final round of day 1.
Dun, dun, dun.
Brad Nelson versus Jamie Park in a pretty reasonable battle of wizards. I really like watching Jamie Park play these days. He just like he really feels like an evil wizard to me. Watching him in the Pro Tour top 8 with his bug list and this one now with his, you know, his scry triggers and his dig through times. He just really is an evil dude. I like it a lot. So
a dig through time.
Yeah. Hey, a little bit of a breakout card this weekend. Lots of decks had it in there. Pretty good. So this game starts off with Jamie Park on the play, resolving an early Seeker, however, does not make it through the turn. Magma Jet takes it out pretty easily, and Nelson is able to resolve a Hordling Outburst to get on the board. Nelson's on a deck that, as far as I know, only he was playing a red-white, he called it a MAC deck, a mid-range aggro control list. I don't know if other people were on it. He was the only one I saw. And Jamie Park was on the Jeskai Winds deck.
Mid-range aggro control.
There were tons of decks that were very similar to his, just like Hordling Outburst and...
Were there a lot of red-white tokens lists in
the
presentation?
Yeah, there was some in the standard and the feature match day two.
Okay, see, I didn't get the whole way through day two coverage.
I just like mid-ranged aggro control.
Well,
it's everything.
He says it's that because of his sideboard is able to allow him to transform into a full aggro deck or a full control deck while his main deck is a mid-range deck.
Okay.
So he was on board. I mean, it's a Monastery Swift Spears, Seeker of the Way tokens deck with a lot of Planeswalkers to back it up. And actually really reasonable removal with Chain of the Rocks and Vanishing Light and a lot of burn.
Okay.
After the Hordling Outburst, legible.
He's legible, okay.
So, Jamie Park tries for a Rabble Master, which unfortunately runs into a Lightning Strike. Then Park tries a Mantis Rider, thinking the coast is clear, and falls to another Lightning Strike. A couple turns go by, there are several tokens, there's actually 6 tokens on board for Brad Nelson, and Jamie Park has only a Seeker of the Way on board in attack phase. Attacks in, Park casts the Make 2/1/1 Soldiers.
Raise the alarm,
thank you. And then also a Jeskai Tarm with +1/+1 and lifelink. To totally wipe the board, go from, again, 6 or so life to 19 or so life. Really, like, every time I see that mode cast on the card, I am just blown out by the power level. +1/+1 to all your guys in lifelink, just devastating in a lot of decks. So, he resolves the Storm Breath on his own turn with then just the life total swing the entire opposite way. The only thing Nelson played after that was Swift Spears. Game 2, Brad makes early tokens, and then he makes Planeswalkers, and Jamie didn't have any lands at all. So that was a pretty quick affair. Game 3, the starts are pretty even. Both players' boards stay empty for a while. Then Brad unloads some tokens and a Seeker. Park tries to... Man, oh, okay, so this is cool. Park actually tried to play a Deflecting Palm on a stoke the flames, but didn't have red, white, man. He cast it off an island, and he then, so he puts it back into his hand. I don't know if he's trying to be sneaky or, I mean, it's round eight, you know, maybe he just honestly doesn't see it. I made that mistake myself in the last large tournament I played in, so I can understand, but, he then, you know, he puts the deflecting palm back in his hand and casts a stroke on it instead, disdainful stroke, to save his life total anyway. But knowing that the card in his hand is a deflecting palm, Brad is able to pressure Jamie's life total with his tokens over the next several turns and cast a burn spell when Park, again having mana issues, only had five lands, three of which were pain lands, could not cast a spell at two life, otherwise would die to his own lands. So Brad Nelson actually takes this one 2-1.
Okay, so that concludes day one of this tournament. However, a few things happened during day one that we need to talk about. Players were being bad. During deck residency, got disqualified from the tournament.
You should do that one again.
Okay, during deck registration, Greg O'Greensey was disqualified because players were being bad. Because he threw cards in the face of the player sitting opposite him.
That's bullshit. That guy should get banned.
During registration, not even during a game. This is like...
Probably like his opponent snickers at how terrible his pool is, or he like makes a joke to his buddy at the next table, and O'Greensey's like, yeah, fuck you! You know, throws cards.
Right.
Man, that's bullshit.
Yeah, that's being a bad person. And then in round seven, Li Zhong Wang was disqualified for the tournament. He used a wooded foothills in response. His opponent cast Jeskai Charm to put Li's only creature on top of his library, at which point Li tried to skip the resolution of the wooded foothills ability. After interviewing him, they determined the error had been intentional, so he could redraw the creature, and he was disqualified from the tournament for that, for cheating.
Yep. Yeah, you shouldn't cheat in professional magic.
No.
You shouldn't cheat in magic at all, period, but you definitely shouldn't do it when there are, you know, one judge for every six players.
It's like, you gotta be about half fucking stupid in the head to decide, I'm gonna cheat.
Well, I mean, yeah, I don't know. I've never understood cheating. I can't understand it at all. I'm glad these guys are banned from the tournament. That's good.
It's probably right. I mean, both situations makes perfectly good sense why you would, I mean, look, I know that if I was the person sitting across from O'Greensey and I got smacked in the face with cards,
I would want him to get a 1-year ban. That's it.
See, I think I would be disqualified as well because I'm the retaliatory type. It would be, you motherfucker!
Over the table, like actual table flip mode.
Like, yeah, like,
this shit is fucking on.
Like, it's on, homie. We're gonna do this right here. Get the coverage cameras over. Sell tickets. I'm gonna whoop this dude's ass.
Hey, call Marshall over here for my post-fight interview.
Yeah, but overall, what was you guys' general impression of day one? I mean, like, the new standard decks were really cool.
With the exception of how badly Blue-Black performed on camera. Blue-Black was 0-6 on camera, which is pretty unfortunate because I think the deck was pretty well.
It was a good deck.
Yeah, the only thing is I feel like they could have found room for Empty the Pit somewhere in any of the 75s, and I didn't see any of them playing it too. Like, they think that Dig Through Time is going to just empty their graveyard so much, but I don't know. I just think it's a very powerful card.
Yeah, Dig is just ridiculous. I still think the deck needs a splash.
I don't think you want a splash. I think if you need the splash, you should just abandon the show.
Splash red, play Crater's Claw.
I don't mind splashing red. I mean, I think you can just fuel your delve that much more and, you know, actually go for the Empty the Pits. I think it's just a much more efficient way to kill them.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, the bad thing was they performed well on, as far as, you know, yeah, the day went.
It's a fine archetype. They had a lot of players in the top 100 with it, you know, so.
It just did not perform when it was put under lights.
It was jinxed. It was a funny thing, you know.
I was, yeah.
Go ahead, Ryan.
I was saying, yeah, kind of suffered the on-camera jinx, but I was kind of disappointed in the lack of innovation this Pro Tour. I was really looking forward to something new, and everything was stuff that's been running around online.
Well, I mean, that just goes to show how much more gets found these days. You know, well, it used to be that the decks like this that, you know, are normal later in the year.
When Theros came out, there was some surprise decks that hadn't been know, Mono Blue hadn't been making the rounds online, and...
Well, I feel like that deck, there were two decks that I thought were standouts. I didn't think the Blue-Black deck was on a lot of people's radars, and the Jeskai Ascendancy combo being taken seriously as a deck, I don't think a lot of people, you know, prepared for until later in the week.
Yeah, they probably just thought it was something goofy.
Yeah, the Blue-Black deck, though, I thought was pretty original. I didn't hear anything about that. I didn't see anyone writing about it, and I was pretty up to date on everything before. So,
I think End Hostilities needs to go on that deck. I think.
Well, then it's not a splash. Then it's a blue white deck.
That's true. I think Esper could be a thing still.
I think the issue is just the win condition. Your everything about the deck is a really reasonable old school blue black deck. You do everything at instant speed. Except, the condition is really clunky. Like, playing Prognostic Sphinx is just...
Very good, though.
I don't like it, man. I think the card is incredibly underwhelming. When your opponent has a Siege Rhino on turn 4 and you have to wait until turn 5 to cast a Prognostic Sphinx, you're a sad dude. I don't like it. It's just the power level's not on par with what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, that best blocks.
Uh-oh, you're cutting out there. But he's very good once... If you have a clear board and once you start attacking and getting the Scry 3 off of him. And I also felt like,
yeah, but
I was really looking forward to more Ashiok. I really liked the blue-black list I saw that had Ashiok in them. I think that card is very good right now with everyone trying to do mid-range strategies. Ashiok.
I think the format sped up a lot over the week. I mean, there was so much Jeskai that's going to put a lot of people onto it.
Well, as far as innovation goes, look.
There was just as much mid-range, too. I mean, we had, Abzan was everywhere.
Absolutely.
I want to see a teamer. I'm still waiting. I don't know. This is something that's been, that some other people have brought up, too, is that it's like no one wants, a teamer tempo deck somewhere out there, and just people aren't, it's just not the style of Magic that people are, trying to play these days. And so no one brought it really.
Well, ultimately, the way, I think a lot of it also has to do with the cards are extremely mana intensive and the numbers are very difficult to come to. It's like, it's a deck that is a lot harder to find than some of the other ones. So
yeah.
It's something that'll probably show up, but like at this point in time, when you have, when you have to go through so many sacrifices for your mana and you're a couple of turns slower than the Jeskai decks, then that puts you in a really bad place. Like, and as far as, the Abzan decks,
I think that... And
traditionally, tempo decks are... Am I cutting out left and right or something?
Yeah, you just cut out for like 10 seconds maybe.
Oh, okay. I said traditionally tempo decks are later in the format is when they usually arise, because you have to find out what people are playing before you can adjust to them.
Yeah, tempo is generally a tool you'll use to beat a control deck rather than a tool to beat a mid-range deck.
Yes.
Okay. And as far as innovation goes, hey, I saw Empty the Pits for 10, and I didn't think I'd see that at a Pro Tour.
That was sweet, man.
Dude, that card is so good. And he wasn't even working in any way to use it. It was also against a blue-black control list with access to counterspells, theoretically the hardest place to make the card work.
Mm.
I mean, power level is insane.
But also the biggest reward if you do get it to work, because you're not going to try it until you're pretty...
I mean, I'd be real happy about it against a lot of the Abzan decks. I think those things go really long, especially like post sideboard when you have access to End Hostilities and possibly Dune Blast.
Yeah, the only problem is against an Abzan deck.
Drowned Aro, because a lot of the Abzan decks are packing Drowned Main.
But Drown doesn't answer it, though. Drown, they still die. You, like, end of their turn, make lethal, they untap and kill them. Like,
yeah, that's true.
Does nothing, you know? So, it's, and again, when you look at the post-board games, when a lot of these guys have access to up to 4 End Hostilities or, like, a couple of End Hostilities and or Dune Blasts, the graveyards get full. The games go really long in the grindy ones. I think that's actually where it's better. Yeah.
I thought it was a very underplayed card as well in those decks. I was surprised more people weren't.
Well, they were on Wingmate Rock and Planeswalkers, and I think that's really good.
Right. So at the end of day one, Mike Sigrist, Yu Watanabe are only undefeateds.
Yep.
Mike Sigrist on an Abzan aggro list with 4 Rakshasa Death Dealers and 4 of the Fleece Main Lions.
Yeah, he said to hell with Caryatid.
Yeah.
Hell with Corsair.
Let me just run those motherfuckers over.
He's running Anafenza.
Yeah, which, one of the only guys really running that main deck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting deck. Not the way we expected to see that.
But power, that, very powerful.
Very powerful, but not the way, you know, most people saw Abzan being built. Like, it was just automatic four Caryatid, four Corsair, and he comes in going, no.
Yeah.
Again, the Abzan aggro deck is something that's been popping up. It's something to combat. It won several states.
I think it's better than dirtling around for the first couple turns.
And it won states here in Illinois. It won several states, actually. It's a very good deck. It was on a lot of people's radars. It just says, fuck it, I'm just gonna run over those, you know, other mid-range Abzan decks, get through the courses of the Caryatids real easy. I like some of these lists that run Brimaz. I run Brimaz in my version. That's what I ran this past Friday, and the card's very good in deck too. So,
right.
Yeah, I like the aggro approach here with this. It's just a way.
I think if you're going to go Abzan, you want to go the aggro list. Like, there are better strategies that you can utilize that use Corsair and Caryatid. I think that if you're in that one, you want to go into the green red or green black devotion list to just really maximize the cards.
So what I was saying was the fleece main line, yeah, I found a lot of times, because I'm in my build, I'm still running Caryatid and Corsair. I would find myself, if I had the Caryatid in hand and a fleece main line, more often than not, I'm casting the fleece main line on turn two, and I feel beats are so good.
I think that there are different ways to utilize Caryatid and Corsair better. I think that the devotion strategies should be using them, and the Abzan strategies probably shouldn't. You know, green, black, and
it's a sweet curve. Like, I want every game going, like every time I go, like turn two fleece main, turn three Brimaz, turn four siege rhino, turn five wingmate, it's over. It's very good. Very good curve.
Hostilities becomes very good when everyone's trying to do that.
Yeah, and that's the card that'll be picked up. I just said a couple minutes ago, I expect sweepers to be something. We're going to see a lot more Anger of Gods in this next week, I guarantee it.
For sure.
So
I don't know that that's the right card.
Like, yeah, well, if people are running Jeskai as much as they are, I mean, what options do they? I mean, I guess they could do end hostilities.
Against Jeskai, you don't want to batter off against the SWAT.
Well, there was some sick-ass, like, blue-white control, or, I'm sorry, white-red control list running end hostilities and Anger of the Gods that have been kicking ass as of late.
Yeah,
and there's also Hardu Painwalkers is really good against Jeskai, too. So, I mean, there's answers out there.
I don't know how great Mardu playing against this guy. It was pretty 50-50 over the week.
I still think Anger's a card, like, definitely expect to see that. I mean, even, you know, one of the more standout Jeskai players at the tournament, Sean McLaren, he was running the two Anger's main because he felt like it's so good in the meta right now.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's okay, but there are a lot more four toughest creatures than you want. You know, I don't know. I mean, a lot of the green decks just shrug.
Yeah, but Anger. The thing is, it kills, like, the other Jeskai decks, and it kills he was also mentioned, we talked about the combo deck with all the mana dorks. Like, that's one way to get...
Yeah, sure, that's fine. So, if that's what you want to do against those guys, that's fine, but, like, I feel like against the Jeskai list, you just want spot removal at instant speed and more card advantage. I think that's the way you want.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Like,
you want to get out tempo.
You know, a lot of the reason why the blue-black deck is reasonable against Jeskai, as long as they don't get too much burn.
Keep up one for one in, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, moving on, we used to play Friday Night Magic, and all we could play was standard modern booster draft sealed, block constructed, or two-headed giant. Now you can literally play anything.
What this really means is that they made Commander available as an FNM format.
They made everything Commander. Everything available. It's not just Commander.
I mean, maybe people will play a Vintage or a Legacy FNM once in a while. But
I mean, you can do four-pack sealed. I mean, that's kind of legit.
Yeah,
you
that's...
can do older format boosters.
I feel like this is just a step towards sanctioning Commander.
You can play Arch Enemy.
Arch Enemy for FNM? Is that actually a format?
Yes, it is.
Is it defined as a format?
Yes, it is.
Wow.
I mean, like, there's so many things you can do that you couldn't do before.
I can't imagine a whole lot of stuff actually comes from this. I think that
I agree, Will. I completely agree. I don't think my store, like, this past Friday we had a huge standard event, a huge modern event, and 24 people drafting. Like, they're not gonna change what they're doing. Like, those are the formats.
Well, but if they run a commander, FNM, they're going to have another.
Well, they have, we got the Commander League, and we got Commander Thursdays, and
yeah,
Legacy.
But if you give them Commander for Prize on FNM with FNM product, they're still going to play it. Absolutely going to play. There's Commander fucking nerds out there. Command, I know people who have 30 Commander decks.
They have no standard or anything else decks.
Well, they have them, but they're like the semi-competitive players.
No, I do know some legit players who all they have is Commander decks. That's all they own.
Yeah, that's cool.
Commander, that'd be sweet. I mean, I just don't like
I actually think Sanctioned with Commander is going to be a pretty cool thing. If there's like ever a Commander Grand Prix, I think that's actually a pretty cool thing.
I think it's a bad thing for Commander.
I think it's a bad thing for Commander, but I think it's a better thing for Magic, and I play Magic, not Commander. So let those guys start going back to five-color fucking Magic where you got to play a 250-card deck. Fuck those guys.
I don't know.
I don't mean that, Commander players. Come on.
It seems to me like they're trying to make it more casual.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is a good thing for Friday Night Magic, because too many Friday Night Magics, you walk in, and it's like going to a fucking mini GP because everyone's packing the best decks. And it's like, you know, it was never meant to be that. It was supposed to be a fun place to go on Friday nights, and I'm guilty of it too. I like playing the best decks.
I think that they have a really strong reason to get the casual players involved. The numbers suggest that a lot of casual players just want something to do on Friday night. There's actually a lot of economic reasons for this during economic downturns. It's good to get repeat value out of games.
No one telling these guys they can't come to the shop and play. The Commander guys are always there on Friday night.
Exactly. So then they're going to be paying to play. They're going to be paying to play, winning a prize. The store gets better. And this is ultimately just better for stores, because whatever kind of tournament they can get people to play and get butts in the seats, they're going to make profit, and that's good. We want our local stores to have
standards where their money is at. I don't see many stores changing from that. And I know that it's for casuals, but I don't mind going. I like being challenged with the, and, you know, against the top decks and stuff. And like this Saturday,
you should play in real tournaments, not FNM.
Like this Saturday, I'm with IQ this Saturday, but I want to practice at FNM the night before. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I do.
I mean, I don't know. Like, I look at what Friday Night Magic's original thing was supposed to be. It was supposed to be a fun place to go on a Friday night.
Absolutely.
And
I wouldn't have gotten involved heavily like that.
Yeah, I can remember when, like, if you walked in with a, I'm using quote marks that no one can see, net deck, like, you were shunned out of this.
If you walked in with fairies or Jund, people got angry.
Yeah. So it, you know, it was like kind of a brewer's paradise. Like, once in a while, you wanted to bring something goofy, and you know that you wouldn't take to a GP, but hey, I can go win an FNM with this. That's not really the way it is anymore. Many PTQs.
I do that all the time, man. I take Master of Cruelties. I take all kinds of weird shit to FNMs. I don't give a fuck.
Right. And as far as you say where the store's buddies at is with drafts, dude, no. People's money isn't limited. There's a lot of stores out there that only run that because they get to sell 3 packs to 8 different people.
Oh, yeah. We had 24 drafters. Yeah. Every Friday, we get about anywhere from, you know, 16 to 24 people drafting at the shop.
The one nice thing about this, before I close this out, is if you're in a store that's in heavy competition with another store very local, you can change your FNM.
Exactly. Just do a different format so you're not competing directly.
Right. You can go, okay, you guys are going to do a booster draft over there. You know, fine, we're going to do standard, or we're going to do 4-pack sealed instead for our limited. And then there is the goofy make your own format, which, hey.
That's awesome. I've played a lot of sweet make your own formats. Mono Black Highlander was a good one for Halloween. You know, like Red Green Highlander for Christmas. Like, there are some fun formats you can make up.
Yeah, I mean, the store can upload its own cube.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, cube on FNM?
If a store wants to build its own cube, they can do a cube for FNM. That sounds fun as hell.
I think this is really interesting. I didn't actually think about the full scope of this, but I really do think that Commander FNM is going to be a thing. I think that there are going to be a lot of stores that are going to stop doing the standard thing and start doing the Commander thing because there's just as much money in it.
Yeah, constructed is constructed.
It's 100 card decks, and some of the cards are really hard to find, and you know.
There's nowhere near as much money for stores and Commander.
The only reason there isn't as much money is because right now there are more players playing Standard. The only reason there are more players playing Standard is because that is what they're forcing you to do.
I'm not saying it's not a market, but
I will argue that if your store sells singles, there's a hell of a lot more money in EDH than there is in Standard.
Absolutely.
because, you know, hey, that's why foil cards are worth so much more than
boxes to get their standard tables.
Yeah.
Our shop has a great EDH community, man. It's pretty big.
You also just have a much bigger shop.
Yeah.
95% of most players in the country.
Yeah. You don't realize how good you have it out there. Like, there's a lot of players who go to your shop, and those places aren't like that.
To have 24 players at a draft as one of multiple functioning events is crazy. Like, there are many stores that don't get 30 people out of for a pre-release.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was sweet. Like, I played Standard, and Megan was playing in a Modern event at the same time.
I know a lot of people would be happy to get 24 for their Standard, and there's no more stragglers waiting around to play something else. They're just like, holy shit, I got 24 players.
That's good. 20 players in my event. That's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's realistically, that's the way the rest of the country, at least. I don't know about the world, but the rest of the country is probably a lot more like the way me and Will see it than the way you've luckily been able to see it.
And around the world, I'm imagining it's even smaller than it is in America, you know? So.
Yeah, it just depends on where you're at. I'm sure, like, there's some in Japan that, you know, you go to and there's 50 players. I'm sure there's some in different countries. But
even like a lot of the European nations and stuff, even the really good players, you know, there's like, it's just that all of the players are very good. They don't have a whole lot of them. They just, you know.
Will you bring up European?
Have you watched coverage of a Saito FNM?
Well, yeah, Saito's store is crazy.
They run like 8 different FNMs.
Yeah, they have 5 that fire, like 1 at noon, 1 at 2, and it's like every 2 hours from there. But yeah. It's Saito, man. Saito's the man. I don't care what anyone says.
Before we move to day 2, one more thing. You brought up Europe. I think the legacy and the vintage in Europe will be a thing for FNM.
Oh, it's going to be great. Yeah, there's going to be tons of places where they're going to be doing legacy FNMs every week. I think that's fantastic. I think this is a really good decision by Wizards.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to see the die of legacy like everybody wants to say is going to happen because of something like this. As silly as it sounds, if you have a good legacy community, hey, we're going to do legacy FNMs, and people will show up.
Looking at East Coast, looking at the Philly area, the Philly through New York, that area is huge through
legacy. Yeah, and all of Europe, all of it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they bought out all of our power, so vintage will be played over there like crazy. Yeah. All right, let's see.
Day two
starts with draft. And at the end of day one, I mentioned that Sigrist and Yuyu Watanabe were the only undefeated. So they're going to have to play each other round one. So let's watch them draft.
So, do you have I have all their draft picks.
I have everything. I took care of all the drafts.
Okay.
So, Sigrist, pack one, pick one. Murderous Cut. Seems good.
Yeah.
It was the best card in that pack, hands down, and it's not a bad card to get. And then second pick, Icy Blast. So his removal is good. He gets a Wind Scout for third. Fourth, he gets a Dismal Backwater, you know, a little bit of fixing. And then he gets a Winter Flame fifth. The rest of the pack was kind of chaff. I mean, it just is what it is. Pack two, he gets a Rakshasa Death Dealer because he was beating people with it the whole time in Standard.
Yeah, right.
Why not beat him in draft?
Give it to him. Let's just give it to him in draft. He knows what to do with it.
Right. And then a Dead Drop, pick two, pack two. So it's just like, I got all the removal. Go fuck yourself.
It's hard cast. He hard cast this. Yeah.
Soul Tattoo Slayer 3, Bitter Revelation 4, Snowhorn Rider 5th. Now, I know you're saying that doesn't fit color pie, but hey, you got fixin'. So.
You don't say.
Well, that's a good card. Pack 3, pick 1, he gets another Soul Tattoo Slayer. Pick 2, he goes Long Shot Squad over Dead Drop number 2.
Longshot Squad is very powerful, and you do need a way to block the flyers in the mid-range, or in the mid-game until your late-game removal kicks in.
You do, and Dead Drop number 2 is kind of redundant, because usually you cast one of those.
I can't see a reason to have a second.
Yeah, so Bloodsoaked Champion, he got third.
I can't believe he picked that card at that place. I was very surprised.
Yeah, so was I. I was a little shocked. But he got rewarded because he didn't take a Disowned Ancestor with that pick, but he got past one. So it's okay, right?
Yeah.
And then he took, and this one was weird to me, he took Monastery Flock over a Treasure Cruise, and I felt this deck needed a Treasure Cruise.
Well, at the same time, he feels like he already has his Delve resources kind of hamster, you know, taken care of. So
Ancestral Cruise, though, is so good, Angelo. You're right. I fucking love Ancestral Cruise.
I mean, Flock is an 06 that blocks anything. I mean, flying, ground, it doesn't matter, and that's good.
I think it's only 05, isn't it?
It's an 05.
Okay, it's an 05, and it blocks all the flyers. You know, it does its job.
It's a super good card. Like, what it actually is in the format is it's a Doomblade, you know?
I don't want to say Doomblade, but
it's... Well, not quite, but, like, it's very close. Like, there are... So it's not a Doomblade, but it's, like, a destroy anything in
It's combat. Almost a pacifism.
It's definitely a pacifism.
Yeah. And then Pack 3, at the end of Pack 3, after he got his Monastery Flock, he's like, okay, what do I get next? He gets a Bear's Companion, because, again, I know it doesn't go with his colors, but there's a fixin'.
He has all the colors.
He does. He does. So then we go and we watch Yuya's, and he goes pack one, pick one, High Spire Mantis, which is a fine uncommon to pick.
Yeah, very good in pretty much all the strategies you could come out of with it. In the red, white aggro or the Mardu or Jeskai, it's even pretty reasonable in the five colors.
Mm-hmm. Windit Scarred Crag over the Jeskai Sky. Fuck, what was that thing called?
The blue one?
Yeah.
I don't know, 2-1 Flying Prowess.
Yeah, that he did choose the Wind Scarred Crag over
Wind Scout.
Yeah, Jeskai Wind Scout, yeah. So I was like, that's weird. He got a Leaping Master third pick. Then he took, and this one was weird to me. You guys tell me what you think. He took Salt Road Patrol over Aerostorm.
So, okay, about the second pick, I fully understand why he took the fixing, because red-white is actually a legitimate deck list. If he, you know, feels like he wants to commit to that and cut it, he can do so without, you know, compromising, you know, without having to pick three color cards. So,
okay.
As far as the Aerostorm over Salt Road Patrol.
The other way around.
Yeah, no, yeah. I think that the patrol itself is actually very good against his deck, right? So if you can take it out of someone else's deck and it's going to make the cut in your deck because it's a very fine card, gives you a lot of gas against the big heavy green guys, which the Jeskai deck can have problems with. But, you know, the Aerostorm, I think it's actually really, you know, reasonable removal, but it's more of a lava axe than a, you know, than a, some kind of removal spell. You know, more often than not, you're going to try and phase him for five with it.
Okay. And then you got Jeskai Charm fifth. Okay.
That's a good card. The +1/+1 lifelink is so fucking real. I cannot.
Yeah, it's so good. Pack two, he goes, Abzan Falconer.
Card's very, very good.
Yes, it is.
One of the better uncommons, yeah.
Yeah, pick two, he goes Alabaster Kieran.
Another good one.
Yep.
It's good. It's not great, it's good.
Pick three, he goes Ponyback Brigade.
Yep.
That was a little bit interesting. I didn't know. I mean, I thought he was pretty well into Jeskai at that point in time. I didn't think he had a lot of reason to switch into black.
Yeah, but he chose to. Then he went Leaping Master fourth and an Aerostorm fifth. And then on his seventh pick, he got a Jeering Instigator.
Crypt's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, that I have written under notables because I'm like,
that's
wow.
The treasonal stick, right?
Yep.
Yes, it is. Like, that shouldn't still be there. Okay.
Well, I mean, I can understand there's a lot of cards that are more powerful than it.
Yeah, it really depends on what you're doing.
Exactly. Like, you have to be pretty aggressive to want access to it.
So then, Pack 3 comes around, and this one completely blew my mind. Pick one, he goes Burn Away over Seeker of the Way.
That was insane. Oh my goodness, that's just... I don't get it.
Neither do I. Like, I like Burn Away. I like Burn Away more than most. Apparently not as much as Yuya.
I've been playing Burn Aways as well, but, like, Seeker probably is, like, the best non-Rakshasa Death Dealer card, 2-drop in the format.
Is that or Air? I do like Air. That 2-2 Death Touch that can get bigger is real.
It's, yeah, I just feel like in a format where there's a lot of morphs and a lot of the decks are pretty aggressive, the lifelink is just so good.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Plus, it grows into a larger than 3-3 if the situation demands for it, which the Air needs help to do.
Yeah. So, pick two goes Warname Aspirant. Fine card. Then he gets past the Dragon-Style Twins.
The card
good
is
good.
Everything Jeskai wants.
It just wants, well, I mean, if that card was unblockable, that would be everything Jeskai wants.
Yeah, you give that thing flying or unblockable. That's, I mean, I'll tell you what, that's what Jeskai wants every time, all the time, after playing a frickin',
Mardu doesn't hate it either.
After an Icy Blast or something like that, you're just like, yeah, buddy. So Leaping Master fourth, Defiant Strike fifth. These two did sit down and play cards immediately after, and...
I really, really thought that Yui was favored. I thought his deck was so good. Like, he was so heavy red-white with just a little bit of blue, you know, versus really what I thought was a janky kind of 4 or 5-color deck.
Right. So game one, it's basically Sigrist 4-color, mostly Assault High deck, versus Yui's Mardu deck. Like, he, you know, got out of Jeskai completely. Game one, somebody played a critter each of her first turns. Why didn't I write down a name? And then ran out of gas. Ah, Yuya did that. And then Sigrist, his creatures kind of took over as Yuya drew land.
He flooded land, so bad.
After land. He ended up, after, you know, his original hand and the next 11 draws, he had 11 lands and 7 spells. Not you the show you want.
You can't win Magic games like that.
I'm usually sorry. Not.
Unless you cast a Villainous Will.
That helps. Yeah. So Sigrist wins 1-0. Yuya draws a ton of lands again game 2.
Yeah.
And Sigrist plays 2 Masters of the Way to kill Yuya.
Pretty awkward. You know, Yuya even picked a deck to limit his mana trouble.
Yeah, well, Yuya actually did play. It was so bad. Like, yeah, at one point he played a banner and cashed it immediately.
Yeah.
But eventually Sigrist was just like, dead drop. And that kind of sealed it. Yeah. So Sigrist takes this round. He's the only undefeated player we have left. I missed round 10 and 11, guys. I'm sorry. I'm terrible at this.
Well, 10 was John Finkel and Gabe Nassif. And Gabe Nassif drafted this, like, heavy Mardu. You know, he had a lot of tokens and stuff. I guess all like a Horde Chief and shit. Finkel, I think, just was able to, I'm pretty sure Finkel took this one.
Was it the, his Mardu tokens? Did he have any Trumpet Blasts?
I was wondering that too.
Your deck really depends on Trumpet Blasts. Like, if you get it, your deck's really good.
Yuya's notably did not have a Trumpet Blast.
He really wanted a Trumpet Blast. He actually never saw one during his draft.
Yeah, awkward.
Yeah.
I know for round 11, they did all the undefeateds. I know Stanislav Sivka won his match to be one of the 6-0s. I don't know what the future was, though.
Sivka was the only 6-0 drafter, yeah.
Was he the only one?
Yeah.
Yep. God.
Yeah. There's that.
He's a pretty fine player, he is.
So the drafting ended, and at round 11, and somebody won a game. I don't know. Sorry, guys. Like, I had a busy weekend. And Ryan, how did you do as far as getting all the games for the standard portion of day 2?
The standard portion of day 2... I mean, round 12, we saw Raph Levy versus Andrew Cuneo. That was kind of an interesting matchup. Raph Levy on the Mardu Planeswalkers deck. That was kind of sweet. And
Andrew Cuneo was the designer of the blue-black one, correct? The blue-black version that the Channel Fireball Pantheon team was playing. I'm pretty sure he was credited as the designer.
Designer? Okay. Yeah, we did get to see some of that deck. Ball that did manage to win on day 2 with it, though, on camera. That was pretty sweet. Bounce.
At the very end.
Yeah, what is that card? The Mystic,
The Pearl Lake Ancient.
Yeah, Pearl Lake Ancient.
Yeah, it is a flash threat. It is kind of what you're looking for in the deck, but, you know, you really want your threat to be evasive if you're one for oneing and you don't have wipes. You know, I mean, Aetherling, this ain't.
No.
Yeah, there was an interesting moment, Owen Turtenwald cracking up round 13 against Masashi Osio.
Masashi Oiso.
Oiso, yeah, this was the matchup he won on camera. His opponent essentially played a land off his courser and then, you know, floated a bunch of stuff with the Nykthos and then played another Nykthos and tried to, you know, do some more mana shenanigans, and Owen was just like, whoa, no, you already played a land this turn. The guy quickly picked up the card, put it back in hand, put the old Nykthos back out, like, backed everything back up. And Owen was just cracking me up because he was said to the judge, like, what the hell, are you not going to warn him? Because the judge
definitely be warned.
Because he said, you got to warn him. He tried to play 2 lands. You can't do that. This is magic.
This is professional level magic. You cannot let that go. This is not FNM.
Yeah, it was so funny, though, like, the look on his face, he's like looking at this judge like, you cannot do that, you cannot play 2 lands in a turn, like, this is like he said this is unacceptable. Like, I felt like his opponent was so like just you know, beat red. This is like a bad moment, you know what I mean? But I felt like Owen wasn't being like being a dick to his opponent or anything so much as just like calling the judge out for like being a sloppy judge, because he like looked at the judge and was like, seriously, like, you're not going to give this guy a warning? I just caught him playing 2 lands.
Yeah, a little awkward. I mean, maybe a little starstruck. The guy, I believe, Oiso, is this the guy who's just inducted into the Hall of Fame this weekend?
No, but no? He's an old player.
Oh, that was Makito Mahara, no?
Yeah, Masashi Osio is an old...
Oh, he's he took a long break.
His ass from what I understand, so...
Yeah, he took a long time off the game.
Yeah, Ryan, just to clear things up, there was actually six guys who finished with a 6-0 in draft. Joel Calafell, Stanislav Sivka, Spencer Gardner. I'm not worried about it. I'm saying overall, there were six guys, Joel Calafell, Stanislav Sivka, Spencer Gardner, Sean McLaurin, Tiago Saporito, and my buddy Charles League.
Yeah.
I know Charles.
Hi, Charles.
I'm happy for Charles. Anybody who's ever listened to the Scrubland podcast, you've heard Charles's voice.
Sweet. Well, hell yeah. Anytime a podcaster does good, magic, that's sweet. Round 14, Andre Stratsky versus Ari Lax. Now, a lot of people... So Ari was on camera a lot this week.
We had a pretty inflammatory thread about Ari Lax started by our own personal Angelo this weekend.
Yeah, we'll worry about that later. We're going to talk about that next week for sure.
Okay. It got called into question, but round 15, this was a big one. Owen Turnwall, Mike Segrist, you know, one of them, basically they're playing for, you know, the top eight at this point, and Segrist is just able to pull it out. Then round 16, they have Turtenwald on camera again, and he loses to Yuya Watanabe. This was probably the most critical matchup for these two players as far as the tournament was concerned. We'll, you know, soon find out. But the coolest thing round 16 and the feature match that they showed on camera was Li Shi Tian, a guy Angelo picked up in his fucking draft. This was the match that did it. He needed this. So he's on camera versus, I think his name was Spencer Garnier. This was like his second pro tour or something like that. So they're playing for, you know, a big finish here. And Li Shi Tian at game one, he's on that Just Guy Ascendancy combo deck that we, you know, have been mentioning. This,
he had a transformational sideboard, as I remember, though.
Yeah, he can go kind of into a teamer like monsters type build. But with the Pelucranos and Knuckleblade. But so game one, basically, Garnier didn't really get damaged down in a clock fast enough, and Lee was able to get like a Tormenting Voice to get a Rattle Claw out, and then a Commune of the Gods found him the Ascendancy. Then he got, you know, was able to cast a Dig Through Time. Then basically the next turn, Carrier came down, but he wasn't on really a clock from Garnier, so he basically cast the Retraction Helix, targeted Carrier, and Twin Flame got things going. He drew, you know, 10 cards, found a Briber's Purse. From then on out, with the Briber's Purse, you know, it comes in, it's a 0-mana artifact. It's basically the one you could tab and make something.
Pretty good in draft, actually.
Blockable. Yeah, it's decent. And from there, he just made a ton of mana, recasting Briber's Purse, you know, untapping the Caryatids with the Jeskai Ascendancy, and then he eventually hits a Nissa, did the untap, you know, hit four lands. He then, this is funny because it says in coverage, he recast Briber's Purse officially, you know, because you do have to, you know, when they say you go infinite, you do have to give a number. I don't know why, you know, I guess at the Pro Tour level, you can't just say I'm going doing this infinite.
Well, infinite isn't good because then you continue to do it forever. You have to choose a number. I do this loop 847,312 times.
Yeah, well,
if you say infinite, technically what you're saying is we just went to
time. I draw this game.
He says, it says that he did this 4,996 times, so his lands were 5,000 tramplers.
Good number.
Yeah, so that's 5,000.
Was that lethal?
I think it was lethal.
Was that lethal?
In Yu-Gi-Oh! That might not be lethal, but here, that worked. So he takes it down. Lee was able to, pull out the combo there. So Angelo's guy making a sweat here for the top. Garnier comes out game two. Lee just didn't get it, you know. So Garnier was able to pull it off of Mulligan, which is funny too, because game one, Lee Mulligan to four.
Wow, that's a great way to get into a Pro Tour top eight.
Yeah, he said he had never even.
I've never won on a Mulligan before. I've seen people do it. I've had someone beat me on a Mulligan before.
Yeah, that's amazing. But then game three again, Lee with the combo. Lee went all the way down to four, and then Garnier did a post-combat Siege Rhino, takes Lee down to one, and then he gets one last turn. And he hadn't caught, you know, he hadn't seen the Jeskai ascendancy. He had a land in hand and a twin flame and a dork on board. He had one draw stack. He had to hit the ascendancy. He hit the Jeskai ascendancy.
And his reaction was joyous.
He looks at his opponent and flicks the cards in his hand. And then he just kind of, boom, lays it out. He cast Twin Flame, looted with the Ascendancy. Again, he didn't look at the draw. He hits Tormenting Voice. And when he cast Tormenting Voice, he had two Dig Through Time.
That's pretty good.
And then the guy picked up his cards and Tien went over there.
So from there, after he used Dig Through Time, he found the combo and fucking won. Off of Mulligan to four in game one, he pulls it out in game three. He throws the chair back and goes fucking running. Something I kind of pointed out is table etiquette too.
His opponent picked up, I will say this, and I'm not trying to defend, but his opponent did pick up his cards and reach out his hand. And Tien kind of took off.
Did he shake his hand? Or
I don't think. I think he just took off. He ran that way.
He came back to the table after throwing the chair and stuff. He did come back and shook his opponent's hand and stuff. It was no hard feelings. I mean, that's insane. You mold the four game one, and then you're at one life game three. One life.
Yeah,
and
that's a good one.
Take this guy's ascendancy.
I'm glad that's on camera. That's a good match.
It was amazing.
Yeah,
that's a good match. That was the highlight to me. That match, that round 16 feature match was
one for the ages. That's a good one. That's one that they'll show on replays at the Pro Tour during breaks, you know, for the next couple of years.
Dude, it was unreal. It was fucking awesome. I was
Who was doing commentary for it?
I don't know. Angelo, I knew, had picked him, and he needed that match, so I was rooting for him, man.
I think I was dead from the start. Yeah, like, I don't know if I won or not, but I was just like, I went in with three players.
Yeah, that's pretty tough.
The only one that had a top eighter. And that not having Wafo did skew your numbers, but I did take into account your averages without Wafo and with Wafo.
I probably crushed without him, but with him, no. But yeah, there's that. So let's see here.
At the end of the Swiss matches, now we, you know.
Ryan, what happened in the booster draft? What happened in our draft? Who won? Okay, give me points. Let's see what happened.
Basically, Will crushed.
I did pretty well.
Will did pretty well, to say the least. So yeah,
my boys.
We got this here. I had Pertinwald, Betcher, Rapper, and Duke. I had an 11th place finish in Pertinwald, 115th with Betcher, 77th with Rapper, and 56th with Duke. For an average placing of 64.75.
Not terrible. That's not bad. Top 64 is good.
Very good, but.
I guess you're 65th though.
Yeah, how many points did you have?
I guess I'll speed this up. Yeah, my average placing was 64.75. Average points was 30.75.
Okay.
That's very good as well.
Yeah.
My highest being obviously Turtenwald with, he finished with 36 match points. So my total points was 123. My high draft was 15, my average draft was 12, my high standard was 21, and my average standard 18.75. So,
I don't know,
pretty good numbers all around. I think anyone would call that a respectable team here at Pro Tour. Angelo, Ichikawa, 197th place. Ouch.
He did not have a good tournament, but he did day two, and I was like, okay, at least he made day two.
Yeah, day two.
Finished with 18 match points, draft 6, 12 in standard. William, Baby Huey Jensen, 155th place, man.
Ouch.
I know, on the same list as Turtenwald. I was like,
21 match points, 12 draft, 9 in standard. Wafo Tapa.
So
we had 356 guys in the tournament. I put him at 356, or 357.
Okay.
Basically, or just absent. 0 match points, though, obviously.
Yeah, that hurts.
And your boy, the only top 8er, 8th place, 36 match points, 15 draft, 21 standard.
Oh, hey, I went for a home run and got it.
Yeah, you got it. No, that was your 4th pick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Third or fourth, yeah.
Good save.
This is his third top 16 finish in the last 2 years.
Yeah, he's hot. He's real good at matching.
He's on a roll. Angelo's totals, your average place without Wafo was 120th. That's okay. I mean, it's middle of the pack.
Yeah.
179th with Wafo.
That sounds about where I'd be if I actually showed up in one of these, so that seems right.
Yeah. Your average points was 25 without, 18.75 with. Your total points overall, those 75, we got you at. Your high draft, 15. Average draft, 8.25 with Wafo, 11 without. Your high standard player brought in 21 points. Average standard, 10.5 with Wafo, 14 without. Then we get to Will in the fucking L.A. Lakers of the 70s.
I will say I have done a lot of homework on a lot of Pro Tours. I have studied a lot of Pro Tour videos. I have watched them over and over again. So
yeah, I went with hot hands. I'm sorry. And
I've proven success.
Well, yep. I picked some hot hands, too, and they just didn't show up as much. I think that's your kind of...
I think you confuse the Grand Prix stage with the Pro Tour stage. There is a different caliber.
Well, they've been showing up, Betcher and Turtenwald. Turtenwald just top-8ed the last Pro Tour.
So oh, I no, he's the man. I mean, Turtenwald's the man.
Yeah. My average place I thought was good at 64.75. Wait till we hear Will's average place.
Probably like 30 seconds.
Not too bad.
Okay, you want the over or under on that? I'll take that.
I'll take the over. I was probably like 30, 40.
We got Sifka. He came in with at 20th. Very good for Sifka, 20th.
I mean, 30th. I think that's about average for him. He was the one who designed the other version of the Black Deck, the one with all the prognostic sciences.
So. He's a badass, so very good pickup.
He's one of the best players in the world. He's so good.
Yeah, top 16 at the last Pro Tour as well, I believe.
Top 8. Oh, well, yeah, I got top 16 the last one, top 8 for him.
Yeah, so he's on a roll. 33 match points, our only 6-0 drafter in the fantasy draft, 18 points in draft, 15 in standard. Ben Stark came in at an impressive 15th place.
Yeah. Ben S, man, thank you. I was worried about the pick. I'm glad he came through. Thanks, Ben. I mean, I'm glad, happy to.
34 points draft. Only 9 points in draft. So he went 3-3 in draft. Pretty poor for him. Standard, though, 25 points. Ben Stark, 25 points for Will. That's huge in the standard portion. Then we get to Jeremy Dasani. Another respectable finish for Will. This is his highest finisher, 60th. Jeremy Dasani, 60th, with 30 match points, 15-15 in each standard and draft. So, fuck, man. On fire. Then we get Willie Edel. 55th place.
Willie.
Doing the thing at 55th place, 30 match points, 12 in draft, 18 in standard. So very impressive there. Will's totals, Will's average placement, 37.5.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's really good.
That's good.
If I didn't get two guys in the top 8 of the last Pro Tour, I think this is a fantasy draft for the ages here. Average place, 37.5. His average points, 31.75.
So hold me there. Yeah.
His total points. Now this was close between me and Will. Will, I had 123. Will came out with 127.
Wow, that's close.
His high drafter, obviously Sifka with 18. His average draft, a respectable 13.5.
Okay.
His high standard, 25. Ben's Will, your average standard player came to play 18.25. The overall rankings, average placement, obviously Will came in first, me second, then Angelo. Average points, Will. It was close. Will, 31.75 to me, 30.75. Angela,
oh, wow. That's close.
Yeah, very close with average points. Total points, you're at 127, me at 123. Angelo, 75 with three guys. What can you do, man?
I had the top 8 guys, so I don't care. I won.
The average draft.
Yeah, you made more money.
Will killed it. His average draft, or 13.5 to the closest, was 12. Average standard, this is where... things change. I got him at 18.75, Will at 18.25, Angelo from 10.5 to 14, depending on Wafo or not. Will obviously had the best drafter at 18. Me and Angelo tied with two guys getting 15. And Will had the best standard player in Ben Stark with 25 points. And me and Angelo tied. We each had Turtenwald and Li Shitian got 21 points apiece for us in standard. So... yeah, Will's standard guy for 25 to 21.
I think it helps that he was a little deeper in the field too. He didn't have to do IDs at the end, or he didn't have the opportunity to ID at the end.
Yeah. Literally, if I go down my list, if Will is in first place in every column except for average,
except standard. That's not bad. Yeah, I look forward to the next one. Thank you.
You did good.
I would now like to gloat at the internet. I'm not done gloating at the internet.
Okay, good. Okay, so like we've alluded to, Wafo did not show up. He was having, what do they use the words here? travel issues.
Yeah, visa
finals. I understood it as he had like finals or he had school commitments.
Oh yeah, he had commitments elsewhere, so he could not make it, and it was really sad because this year, unlike past years, they changed the way the Hall of Fame happens.
Yeah,
they did not do it at Worlds; they did it here because, well, it's Hawaii. It seems like a good reason to me. That, and they changed it from a big ceremony that's like during day one to, you know, right before round one to like a dinner where, you know, all the past Hall of Famers come, they sit down while these guys are getting inducted, and those are the people in the room.
Incredible.
But
that is
Guillaume,
a very special thing.
Yeah, that probably make you feel good.
Jesus, I can't even imagine that.
Guillaume did do like a video Skype thing where, you know, he thanked everybody, but Makihito Mahara and Paul Reitzel also went in, and they were there to go in.
Yeah, that's a pretty respectable roster.
That's a really good class.
Yeah, it's pretty good. We have one from all the major continents, you know. I mean, South America, I apologize, but, you know. Europe, Japan, and America all represented. Bunch of Pro Tour wins among them, you know, a bunch of top eights, influential people, and a lot of different styles among them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, clearly. You know, they go over some of the Honolulu decks that every one of them had, because all of them actually kind of did well in Honolulu at one point in their life. Like, Greater Good Gifts by Makihito Maharo back in
'96. Oh, my goodness.
Was that deck just not a pain in the ass as well?
Oh, jeez. I mean, so it's basically the deck of almost infinite play combinations. You're running Gifts Ungiven, which you want a tutor for four card combinations of different card names that have similar enough effects that you can enact some kind of game plan. And with Greater Good, he has this sacrifice creatures to draw cards engine, just incredible late game power to fuel further gifts, and therefore, you know, either combo off or just win through attrition. Pretty.
And not to mention, you know what the top card of your deck is at all times because of Sensei's Divining Top.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a blast from the past when I went and looked
at that. Yeah, Mihara notably won Worlds with a Dragonstorm deck. In the finals, he actually made a mistake in game 5 while going off, miscounted his mana, and tanked for about 12 minutes before he came to the line of play that won him the game and the match. It was pretty awesome stuff.
So he's always been like a master, like, combo guy.
Combo, mid-range, you know, basically he plays a lot of decks that are fair throughout the mid-game and then do something ridiculous in the late game. With the exception of Dragonstorm. Dragonstorm was just pretty much the most powerful thing you could be doing at any point in time. It was in the Time Spiral Standard format. Once you had the access to Dragonstorm equals I win the game, it was the most crazy thing you could do in Standard.
Yeah, it was like, I win.
Yeah,
there was that's a lot of sweet as hell, Dragonstorm.
Dragonstorm, and you get to tutor for dragons and put them into play without paying their mana cost. So you get
Bogard Hellkites.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. You just play them for free, you know, for playing spell on, like, turn 4 because you're unsuspending a couple of Lotus Blooms, and then you cast, you know, Rite of Flames. It's a sweet deck. Mihara's was a blue-red version with a lot of Telling Time and Dig for Digging Elements, Electrolyze for defense. Pretty, really sweet. Sweet deck.
Yeah, I'm going to get 4 Bogard Hellkites, and that's going to deal 20. And if for some strange reason you're still alive,
not dead.
Bogard Hellkites.
I still have 4 5/5s, and it's like turn 4.
Because there was times when you would go off with that, because towards the end of the Dragonstorm era, there was the Martyr deck.
Yeah.
And they would still be alive.
The Martyr deck in the top 8 of that tournament, played by Gabriel Nassif.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was a top 16 that he had at Honolulu. Was the Greater Goods deck. These are not these guys' best deck, like Will said about the Dragonstorm. They're saying Counter Mizzet by Guillaume Wafatapa, who top 16 the same tournament, but his best deck was clearly Draw New Deluve, but
I question that. The one he won the Pro Tour with was Mystical Teachings.
Well, the Teaching was his Draw New Deluve deck.
Oh, okay. That was the original title for it. But Draw New wasn't in the game.
It was not in the deck, but that's what they called the deck. There was no Draw New in it, but they called it for some reason Draw New, because that was like the next step in that deck.
Really, really exciting topic. He played against a really hot, the guy who won Pro Tour Hawaii the first time. He played him in the top 8, and then another Japanese Pro Tour winner in the finals. Really sick match. Pickles against the Draw New Deluve deck.
Pickles combo.
Like, in the tournament that had 4 or 5 different blue control decks, like, Wafo won. That's when he became known as just the best control player in the world.
Yep. And this deck, though, was Kaiga with Niv-Mizzet. And then a bunch of control cards like Electrolyze, Remand, Mana Leak, Repel, Boomerang. Boomerang's so fucking good.
Yeah, Boomerang was for their lands at that point in time.
Mm-hmm. Hinder, Rewind, Four Tidings.
Tidings.
Yeah, I said Tidings.
Card. That's a sweet magic card.
Yeah, two Confiscate, a bunch of just, you know, he has like a mirror in the Moaning Well.
Is that each player draws a card, or each, or you?
You gain life equal to the sacrifice creature's toughness.
Crazy show.
He did have Minimo, the School of Water's Edge.
Legendary creature gets something blue.
Untap target legendary permanent, and with Niv-Mizzet
with
Kaiga.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, it works pretty nice. And then he had Ashinka, the Bloodsoaked Keep, because you can give legendary creatures first strike with that.
I mean, it's better than a mountain.
It is. And the other one that they put on here was Paul Rietzel, who top four Pro Tour Honolulu in 2009 with an Esper deck.
Oh, that was the one, the guy who Wafo
Stop beat. Their Foundry, dude.
The guy who Wafo, yeah, no, I paid my rent with that deck on Magic Online 4 months. the guy who lost to Wafo Tapa in his top eight, the Wafo won in the finals, actually was the one who won that Pro Tour Honolulu in 2009. Can't remember his name, they call him Chief. He kind of looks like the guy from, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but he's this Japanese dude. Awesome player.
Yeah.
Paul Rietzel. He won with a wow. All white deck. Was I think in an extended format? Was that what it was?
Well, I'm sorry, I was looking at the deck.
Paul Rietzel's Pro Tour win, was it? He won, I mean, he was like white. Was it the mono white first modern Pro Tour? Is that the one he won? The one where Kai Buda was in, Kai Buda and Brad Nelson were in the top eight?
It might have been.
I think that's the one he won. He played, I think, pretty sure it was mono white. But he won.
It's just weird looking back at this. Like, I remember this Esper deck so well. Like, you was running 8 border posts.
Dude, I will tell you almost card all 75 in the list.
Go.
Man. Like, all right,
go.
So Court Homunculus is your one drop.
How many?
You have 3.
Okay, so how many he had?
Do you have
failed
four?
Already.
Okay.
You ran 4.
Okay, so you run Esper Stormblade or whatever it's called, Esper Stoneblade.
Okay.
You run the
how
white.
Many?
You run 4 of that. Guy's the best guy in the deck.
Okay.
You run 4 of the white, blue, 2/2 protection from red. I can't think of his name.
Outlander.
Yep. You Vealkan Outlander. You run 4 Master of Aetherium.
Yeah.
Alright, so, okay, I can't come up with any more, but.
Okay, 2 Esper Zoa?
Okay, yeah, that's a good one. And then definitely 4 Thapter Foundry.
Does
he run the Sanctum Gargoyles in the board? That's for sure.
Sanctum Gargoyles, 4 on the board, yeah. The rounding out his deck, he had 4 Tide Hollow Skeller.
Oh, of course. I can't, I'm sorry, man.
And he had 4 Glaze Fiend. Dude,
Glaze Fiend's
all-star
real.
There, but it was very good in Standard, too, at 0/1 with flying. Who would have thunk it?
Well, I mean, you just, when your lands are artifacts and you, like, can Thopter Foundry for a million, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah, border post for artifacts, not his actual lands. Don't,
yeah.
You know, get it twisted. With a sideboard of 3 Zombie Outlander, that was the prior.
Yeah, you were so favored post-board against Jund because you just had protection from all their deck.
Right. 2 Soul Manipulation, because you can counter spells or return or just do both.
Counter a Broodmaid, and then you return your master. It's pretty good.
Yep. 4 Sanctum Gargoyle, like Will said. 3 Path to Exile.
Yeah, you need it. You don't actually want it in the main, but you need it against the red-white Paya deck at the time.
3 of probably my favorite card during...
Counter... Is it the counter whatever?
Counter Squall.
Oh, Counter Squall was massive.
Yeah, target non-creature spell. Its controller loses 2 life for a black and a blue.
Oh, my goodness. So, the reason the deck was so good was because this is when Jund was oppressive. And, like, this deck just beat Jund. Just beat it every fucking time. Beat the 5-color deck. The only deck it lost to was Naya. It was awesome.
Yeah, Naya was a little bit too big for it.
This was even when damage could still go on the stack to your Thopter Foundry until the end of this Pro Tour. This was the last Pro Tour where damage went on the stack. So cool. Like, the best deck by a wide margin of that Pro Tour.
Oh, man. Just, you know, looking at those decks, it did bring back some memories, because, like...
Yeah, if it would have been he would have won. It was a draft top 8, and, you know, it was a quietest spike pinger deck that took it down.
Okay. I do remember that.
Yeah, so, I mean, the guy had 2 quietest spikes in his deck, and that was the end of it.
Sweet. So, okay, we'll move to the good old top 8, day 3. And our top 8 consists of players you've heard of. Get that.
Angela, the last thing I heard was players you've heard of.
In first place.
You totally cut off and now you're all staticky, man. You want to start that over.
Players you've heard of.
Players you've heard of. Players you probably haven't. But I was obviously stalling for time, so who cares? We had, coming in first place, after the Swiss rounds, we had Sean McLaren with a limited record of 6-0, a constructed record of 6-2-2. favorite clan was running Jeskai. Jeskai.
Won a Pro Tour with Jeskai.
Previous magic accomplishment. He won the Pro Tour Born of the Gods. That was his only Pro Tour performance, and he made it to a second one. Wow.
That was his first Pro Tour?
Yeah. His first was Born of the Gods.
The one that he won?
Yeah.
He was a rookie?
Yeah.
I didn't know that, Jesus Christ. I mean, I watched the cover.
It might have been his first Pro Tour top 8.
Okay.
They have no more mentioned.
Okay.
Then we have Li Shitian coming in at 8, and he's going to play against McLaren. And Li Shitian had a limited record of 2-1-3-0 and a constructed record of 7-3. His favorite clan apparently is Teemer. His previous magic accomplishments included top pro point in the APAC for 2012 and 2013.
That's best Southeastern player, Southeast Asia player.
Yes. Pro Tour return to Ravnica top 4. Pro Tour Born of the Gods top 8.
Wow.
GP Birmingham 2008 champion and the 2009 Hong Kong national champion.
I'm surprised he hasn't won that more.
There's probably more that they just didn't put on here.
No, just the Hong Kong national championship. I honestly think he'd be a shoo-in every year.
Yeah, you would think that. So, Ryan, why don't you tell me what deck Sean McLaren was in? What cards was in that deck?
Shaw was running, like Will mentioned, Jeskai.
Okay.
Blue, white, red. Two Sarkins. So, right away, powerful start. He's got two Sarkins, two Anger of the Gods, two Banishing Light. Then his creature package. He's got one Seeker of the Way, four Goblin Rallymasters, and four Mantis Riders. 20 instants.
Always should be.
Yeah, you'll see 16 of these in every list. Four Lightning Strike, four Magma Jet, four Jeskai Charm, and four Stoke the Flames. And then he rounds it out with four Dig Through Times. Pretty damn good. So.
Sideboard.
A very interesting approach here. He rounds out his set of Anger of the Gods, so two more of those. Then he's bringing in two End Hostilities as well. So he's definitely, you know... And if the tempo gets out again, you know, mid-range decks, you bring in End Hostilities, you clear up the board, then you lay a Mantis Rider, get right back to what you were doing. Seems good. Two Kuranos, God of Storms. That's another good one, especially I know I saw that in a blue-black control matchup. It was pretty damn good.
Oh, it's insane in that matchup. They can't remove it, and with the exception of Perilous Vault, and they just die to it.
Yeah, if it sticks, you win.
Pretty
good. Three Dissolve, a Disdainful Stroke, two Negate, a Phyrexian Revoker, and two Erase.
The Revoker, go ahead.
The Revoker I said he mentioned was specifically for one deck and one card, and that was Caryatid in the Jeskai Ascendancy combo deck.
Caryatid. That and the two Erase also.
Yeah. And that's also why he mentioned one of the main reasons he was running two main deck, Anger of the Gods. So
yeah, he actually sideboarded in 11 cards against Jeskai Ascendancy.
It's awesome. Combo. Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, he's on top of it. He knew about everything. He had his ear to the ground, which is funny because he doesn't have a team. Tests with his brother and he plays Magic Online, which is very fortunate because it was a pretty known environment. Maybe that's why people didn't test as hard because they were in Hawaii.
I honestly don't know. This was just the MTGO metagame.
Well, I mean, that's what MTGO does. It breaks things down so fast. Like, you have a week on MTGO where you can play standard with this, and people figure it out pretty quick.
I thought that the Ascendancy and the blue-black strategies were pretty...
They were fairly
off the radar.
The problem with Ascendancy on MTGO, like, you know...
It's a lot harder to play on MTGO.
Yeah, any of those combo decks that require a lot of tapping, like, you have a time limit. You can die to tapping stuff. And you can't just say, hey, I'm going to do this 100 times. That's why Eggs was never on MTGO, because, well, you'd time yourself out every time. Online? Oh, wow.
I'm very fast online. I also played the blue-black popper mirror online better than anyone, man. Let me tell you. And that was one of these craziest timeout slugfests ever.
Right. So, Will, how about you tell me, what was Li Shitian playing?
Oh, my goodness. It's so awkward that we mentioned that he has all of these plans on how to combat the combo deck, because Li Shitian was, in fact, on Jeskai Ascendancy list. Is one of Nissa World Waker, serves as his win condition. Four Retraction Helix as a very vital combo piece, and three Dig Two Time as, you know, the real engine of the deck. Two Kiora's Follower, four Rattleclaw Mystics, and four Sylvan Caryatids, are the creature component of the combo. Two Briber's Purse are Infinite Loop, We have 4 Commune with the Gods, 3 Tormenting Voice, and 2 Twin Flames, followed by 4 Dragon Mantles and 4 Jeskai Ascendancies to round out our non-land cards. 22 lands, notably a lot of them hurt him. Sideboard, again, a little bit of a transformational board. We have 4 Savage Knuckle Blades, 2 Pelucranos, we have 3 Arc Lightnings, 3 Lightning Strike, and 3 Swan Song to protect combo and buy us time. That rounds out our 75.
Okay, so which one of you two has the game?
The game?
Yeah, the actual when they played each other, you know. Do one of you two have what happened?
I didn't actually watch it.
McLaren and Lee?
Yeah.
McLaren took it down.
Okay, how did it happen? Like, I can pull up numbers, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't tune in until the semifinals.
I
was watching the Steelers game.
I'm sorry.
Was it 2-1?
Probably. I think at some point, I'm pretty sure that Li Zhitian went to the transformational sideboard and tried to beat down with Knuckle Blades, but his deck was not nearly as good as McLaren's at that point in time.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm guessing you don't have any of the...
Yeah, he took out all his combo Okay, in that matchup, I do remember, because they spent a lot of time on his sideboard. He took out in that matchup all his combo pieces, except for...
His, like, Retraction Helix for value, and, like...
I didn't see he kept right. in. He took out,
and then the mana dudes, you know, you take out all the bullshit
gods, Retraction Helix, Dragon Mantle, Riber's. He took like 15 cards out and brought everything in this matchup.
Did he bring in the Swan Song?
McLaurin brought in 11 cards. Swan Song was one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, but McLaurin ends up winning this 2-0.
Okay.
Well, he won game one also. So yeah. Probably just I mean, the deck is not super, super consistent. It kind of needs all 3 games to win a lot of times. So.
And so, face off against, as we mentioned, McLaurin, who said he tweaked this specifically to be good game one against this deck.
He knew about it. He was there with enough time with his ear to the ground. So.
Right. So, in our second match of the quarterfinals, we had Mike Sigrist versus Ivan Flock. Mike Sigrist went 5-1 in limited, 7-2-1 in constructed. Favorite clan assault title. I don't know why they keep putting that up there. Anyway, Grand Prix Washington DC winner and a top 8 of Grand Prix Richmond. He's actually a fairly older player who's just really found it. And he goes up against Ivan Flock, who we've all heard of. Limited record of 5-1, constructed record 7-2-1. Pro Tour Magic 2015 winner. 4 Grand Prix top 8s. He won GP Lisbon and Team Worlds champion in 2010. So Ryan, do you want to go over Sigrist?
Yeah, who won this match? Was it
we'll go over that after.
Okay.
Tell me what they were playing, man. What was he playing?
Sigrist on the sweep. This is the Abzan Aggro. This is what I'm rocking next week. This Abzan Aggro list is super fucking fun. He's starting off 3 Planeswalkers, just straight up Soren, Solemn Visitor, no Elspeth, just 3 Sorens. His spells, he's got 4 Thoughtseize, 1 Ulcerate. Ulcerate's very good in these aggro lists. 3 Abzan Charm, magic number for this charm, and 4 Heroes Downfall. Very good. Creatures, pretty straightforward. He's got 4 Fleecebane Lions, we mentioned this earlier, 4 Rakshasa Cat Death Dealers, 2 Heir of the Wilds, 3 Anafenza the fucking Foremost, 4 Herald of Torment, because sometimes you just want to fly over shit, and...
Yeah, that card's pretty good.
It's very good. It's the sole reason he runs, 2 Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth in his lands, I think is exactly...
Better than a Swamp for that splash.
Yeah, he wants to be able to hit Herald on turn 3, as well as his, Hero Downfall, if he needs to, but... And he's also, he finishes it off...
Ryan, you cut out.
He's so good.
Ryan,
so.
Last thing I heard was he finishes it out.
Siege Rhino.
He finishes it out with 4 Siege Rhino. So, his lands of note, nothing really other than the Urborgs, the 2 of those, you know, he's up in it there, kind of risky, but whatever. Sideboard, 1 Silence the Believers, 3 Drown in Sorrow, 2 Wingmate Rock, 2 Erase, 2 Despise, 1 Ajani, 3 Bioblight, and 1 Whip of Erebos. I love his package of Wingmate Rock and
You love his package.
I do. Against Control and the other mid-range matchups, he says he brings in the Wingmates, the Ajani, and the Whip, and it was very good. It seemed to work very well for him. Flock was definitely not prepared for that sideboard. This was sweet. This is very
pretty good when you don't have Perilous Vault.
Yeah. So, yeah, very good. I like this list.
At this match here.
Who'd we lose?
I don't know.
I'm still here. I had a bunch of dead air, though.
Oh, okay. That was probably when I was talking and things went bad. Will, why don't you tell me what Ivan Flock was right?
Sure, absolutely. It's the Blue-Black Dirtle special. This one's the Czech version cooked up by Stanislav Sivka. Our win condition here is our four prognostic sphinx. The idea is that eventually we'll get there with it. Four Despise, two Thoughtseize, as our pinpoint removal spells. They came to this conclusion because they just didn't want to take all the damage. Two Drown in Sorrows, four Dig Through Time as our real gas, four Dissolve, four Disdainful Stroke, four Heroes Downfall, three Bile Blight, two Silence of Believers. It's really straightforward. For those people who think that, you know, control is a difficult deck to play, you know, this is about as straightforward as it gets. You know, you have 27 lands, four Dismal Backwaters for incidental life gain, just, you know, little stuff like that. Pretty neat little deck. Sideboard, one Bile Blight to finish off the set, a third Silence the Believers. We have two Return Phalanx to protect us from the aggro decks, one Set Adrift. There has to be a specific reason for that one. That's actually for, like, problem cards like Whip and other artifact, etc. Just maybe an Ascendancy. Two more Drown in Sorrows, three Clever Impersonators to copy opposing Corsairs, one Freakus Cure, one more Thoughtseize, two Negates, and a Purrlake Ancient to finish off the 75.
Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, Mike Sigrist wins this because I know Will, he really liked Ivan Flock's deck.
You know,
and Ryan really liked Sigrist's deck.
I think Sigrist's deck is better. I don't, like, I liked a blue-black dirtle, but I would play this deck.
Yeah, Sigrist wins 2-0. Moving on, Tiago Saporito, Andrzej Strutsky, and Tiago Saporito. You've probably never heard of him. He was one of the others on Willie Edel's Brazil team. That's pretty much his only Magic accomplishment worth talking about.
Also on a Willie Edel list this weekend.
No. He is Willie Edel's protege.
Yeah, but before this, it was Team Brazil was Willie Edel and
three
others. Now it's Willie Edel, Tiago Saporito, and others.
Well, supposedly Edel's been grooming this kid. He's only 21.
Willie Edel
has so much respect for. Like, the guy, in the period of time he's played Magic, has always been one of the best in the game. Like, go back and watch his footage. With the exception of punting a Pro Tour Finals, he's the man.
Okay, but this is Tiago's moment in the
game. I know,
sense.
I'm
Why
sorry.
Are we talking about
I'm Reagan? Sorry.
Battle, this was the Battle of the Youngsters, 21 versus 19, and Tiago on that Abzan mid-range, man.
Okay, can I go over stats first?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we normally do this a certain way.
My bad.
My first time with this much protocol. I apologize for the breach.
Limited record, 6-0. Constructed record, 6-3-1. Again, his previous Magic accomplishments, they have a sad face here, but actually he qualified for Team Brazil this year. So that is an accomplishment. If you ask me, Wizards apparently thinks it's not. So, Ryan, what was he on?
The Abzan midrange.
Okay.
Two Thorin. This guy was a breakout planeswalker this weekend. Very good here. He's running the, you know, typical midrange creature package for Abzan. Four Fleecebane, four Caryatid, four Courser, one Anofenza, four Siege Rhino, and one of my new favorite cards, four Wingmate Rock. I ran three of these this past Friday. Card is nuts.
It just makes me want to have access to Disdainful Strokes.
So good. Card is so good. Yeah, Disdainful Stroke. That's a very good card, yeah. Wingmate Rock, nutty. So he went all out on that. His spells, kind of different. One Drown in Sorrow main. I guess he was preparing for something.
For the Hornet Queen in the mirrors.
Only one Thoughtseize. Four Heroes Downfall, two Bile Blight, and as usual, the three obligatory Abzan Charms.
So that's the deck.
But, he's got one Whip of Erebos as well. Just for spice, you know, why not?
Sideboard?
His sideboard is interesting. Yeah, he's got some cool choices I like. He's got one Anofenza. He's got an Agent of Erebos, which I don't know, I find that pretty sweet. I like that. That is the comes in and exile all cards in the opponent's graveyard.
Okay.
I mean, I guess if you're predicting...
It's pretty good against the Del strategies. You're trying to do that to nerf opposing digs.
Yeah, I mean, if you're predicting that, I mean, or just delve in general, he has three Thoughtseize, a Back to Nature, one Erase, two Elspeth, four End Hostilities. I like that. Yeah. I love four-end hostilities. One utter end and one stay in the mind. Pretty damn good.
Okay, so he goes up against the pride of Hombaka Nadvlatvu, Andrzej Ostrotski. He had a limited record of 5-1, a constructed record of 7-2-1. His previous magic accomplishments is he was a Mox winner, and he top 16 GP Amsterdam.
So this is kind of his first big breakout.
He's young. He's only 19 years old. Wow. Will, why don't you tell me what he was playing?
He is playing a very creature-oriented Jeskai list. Full four of Seeker of the Way, Manus Rider, of course. Oddly enough, though, no Rabble Master scenes that goes entirely for evasion. We have four Hushwing Griffs, three Ashcloud Phoenix, and two Stormbreath Dragon to just get over the top of everyone.
Stormbreath Dragon?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. I was thinking something stupid.
No, I mean, basically everything Seeker has evasion, so.
Hushing Griff is, with so many siege rhinos running around. Seeing him blank those was pretty hilarious.
Just a lot of the cards, even that are like the big game trumps and the green decks, it takes care of. So we have four Magma Jets, four Lightning Strikes, four Jeskai Charms, four Stoke the Flames, and three Banishing Lights. Pretty predictable list, very consistent, 24 lands. We have three Magma Spray, one Gainsay, two Anger of the Gods, three Prognostic Sphinx, three Disdainful Strokes, and three Suspension Field to go for our control plan after sideboard.
Ooh, sounds sweet. So Soparito wins this 2-1. I do not have any notes on this either. I watched all these things, but I was doing something else at the same time, so it's kind of hard to write. So I don't know how they played out. It was probably a better game because it was 2-1 than, you know, the earlier ones, which were 2-0.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's that. In our very final quarterfinal, we had Ari Lax with a limited record of 5-1, a constructed record of 7-1-2. Previous magic accomplishments, a whole fuck ton of them. Seven GP top eights. One of those he won at Toronto in 2013. He has two Pro Tour top 16s. And, I mean...
Notably, both of them were ninth.
Yeah, and a lot of Star City things. Lots.
He's a pretty respectable player. I like the guy quite a bit. I played against him in 2008. Thought he was a pretty reasonable dude.
Okay, and Ryan, why don't you tell me what he was on?
Ari Lax, man. I'm like, what am I, the Abzan guy?
I don't know. What am I, the Jeskai guy?
And Will gets the bottom one. That's just how I've been doing it the whole way.
Gotta love me some Ari Lax on this Abzan rid range. A bit different than the others in the field.
Yeah,
he's doing
sure
to this higher. He's trying to get to these more higher impact spells, so he's running seven Walkers, and not just Sorin. He's going two Sorin, two Ajani Mentor Heroes, and three Elspeth Suns Champions. There were tons of games where he'd go Siege Rhino, Ajani Mentor Heroes, make a Giant Trampler, good game. his spells, four Thoughtseize, four Abzan Charm, three Heroes Downfall, two Utter End. He runs the fourth Abzan Charm. I said three is the magic number here again. He used, if you watched on camera, he used the Dig mode a lot more than his other people in the field did.
I think that's one of the better versions of the card.
Boy, and he's trying to, again, he's trying to hit these higher impact. He really, you know, three Elspeth, he's really trying to hit these higher impact spells. So he runs two Elvish Mystic, again, that facilitates, you know, the Ajani and things like that. Four Sylvan Caryatid, four Courser, two Wingmate Rock, again, very good card, and the four Rhino. So, yeah, pretty fucking sweet. I loved this deck as well. A lot of fun. I'm more aggressive, so I like the aggro build. His sideboard, this is a sweet sideboard too. He comes with a suite of sweepers, a suite of sweepers. One End Hostilities, one Dune Blast, and one Mass Calcify.
Mass Calcify, I believe, was never boarded in.
No, that was a joke.
Against Yuya Watanabe, he meant to bring in Dune Blast, and he accidentally brought in Mass Calcify.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was revealed off the top with a Courser, and Yuya had a nice little laugh.
Yeah, he actually sat it for the rest of the match off to the side, face up.
Yeah.
So, and then another sweeper, and three Drown in Sorrows, and then three Bio Blights, two Murderous Cut, one Unraveled Aether, two Nissa World Waker, and a real standout card I wanted to say something about was his one Liliana Vess, or what he called it, Fetch Siege Rhino again.
I mean, in a world of mid-range mirrors, you just want to get to your money cards, and Double Tutor is a great way to do that.
Yeah, well, and double value tutor. double Siege Rhino is just game ending. Got to see that. That was pretty fucking cool. Yeah, Liliana's a beast, so.
Yep, and Yuya Watanabe was his opponent, and he had a limited record of 4-2, a constructed record of 8-2. His previous Magic accomplishments, again, more than, you know.
Two-time player of the year.
You don't need to say much more than that. Hall of Famer.
God damn,
this guy's Pro Tour top eights, 21 Grand Prix top eights.
Seven Grand Prix wins, right? Isn't that what
it is? Yeah, it's seven or eight. It's ridiculous. Crazy. This dude is insane good.
Oh my God, he's good.
Yeah, so, well, what was he on?
Believe it or not, he was on Jeskai.
Wow, this worked out so well.
Yeah, no, we have three Sarkins in this list, pretty heavy on it. Four Seeker of the Way, four Goblin Rabble Master, four Mantis Rider. And then we also have three Brahmaz, King of Arestos Brahmaz in the main deck.
Mm-hmm.
We have two Gods Willing to protect our dude because we care a lot more about them in this list. Four Lightning Strikes, four Magma Jets, four Jeskai Charms, and four Stoke the Flames. Can you believe that all of the Jeskai decks have these 16 cards? We have 24 lands, yeah. Which seems about the right number to settle on. We have a third God's Willing in the board, three Magma Sprays, which seems about right, three Disdainful Strokes. We have one Chandra Pyromaster for some value against the green decks. We have two Prognostic Sphinx, four Suspension Fields, and an Elspeth Champion round our 75.
Okay, yeah. So Arilax wins, though.
Can I ask a question real quick, Will? Would you run, like, a mix of, do you think a mix of, like, Suspension Field, Singing Bell Strike?
No, I wouldn't run those cards. I mean, like, if I'm playing the Jeskai deck, I don't necessarily want to be doing enchantment-based things. There's enchantment hate in the sideboard, and especially in game three, like, you're almost on a position where you have to board them back out. Yeah. You know,
three Sarkins is very good. I like three Sarkins. I think
Sarkins a very, very good magic card. It's true.
Okay, so Arilax beats Yuyu Watanabe 2-0, and very untraditionally, all of the top seeds won.
Yeah, that's very odd.
That's very untraditional. All the top seeds won. So we had the number one versus the number four, Sean McLaren. He wins 2-1 against Mike Sigris. Does anybody have notes on how that happened? No. Okay. Then we had Arilax versus Tiago Saporito, and I do have notes on this because at this point I had taken my kids home and I was done playing with them for the day.
I had a sick girlfriend.
That's understood. So we had Sigris. He was on Abzan Aggro, and McLaren, again, he was on the Jeskai Winds deck. McLaren started game one on the play. Oh, wait. I did have this. Wait. Oh, no, I have the McLaren one. I don't have the Arilax one. I'm sorry. Arilax rips a Elspeth off the top, throws it down on the table, and wins.
That's the finals game one.
Was it the finals game one?
Yeah, got it, bro.
Okay, well, whatever. Sean McLaren, okay, during his match, this is how he wins 2-1. Sigris, turn two thought sees, and he gets a Sarkon. But McLaren uses,
though, wasn't it? It had like two of everything else.
He uses the Rabble Master to do the old Stoke the Flame play, killing Sigris Death Dealer. It forced Sigris to play Anafenza instead of a Thought Seize, which the Anafenza was obviously going to die to the Rabble Master, because he had to block. And that led McLaren to use his only card left in his hand, which was Dig Through Time. And that got him the final cards needed to take that game.
Dig Through Time 1-0. Generally finds a damage.
Right. McLaren does side in Anger the Gods and End Hostilities, while Sigris brings in some Bobblites and Drowning Sorrows and some Wingmate Rocks. Sigris goes on the play, and he goes turn two thought sees yet again. He gets McLaren stoked to flame. Sorin gets Disdainful Stroke. That was fairly important in the match. The second Sorin sticks, however, but is killed immediately by Charm. Resource trading continues, however, the one Sorin that he got to stick, he did get to play, you know, use the ability to put a vampire into play. And that vampire ended up doing all the work that he was going to need for that game, believe it or not. McLaren does end up conceding, and it's tied 1-1. So that puts McLaren on the play. And again, this is the burn deck. This deck wants to be on the play. McLaren keeps a two-land hand. He doesn't hit three on time. Sorin sticks on turn four for Sigris. Turn five, he finally hits his third land, McLaren does, and he plays a Rabble Master, getting Sorin for one. A Thought Seize got a Stoke instead of the second Rabble Master. Second Rabble Master, he plays the next turn, attacks Sorin. Between Jeskai Charms and two Rabble Masters, the game didn't last much longer than that. It just didn't. So that's how McLaurin took his. Again, Ari Vax beats Tiago Saporito. So we, again, in the finals, we have the one versus the two.
It's actually funny. They ID'd their match and joked about whether or not it would matter because they were the one and two seed, about playing for who would have the one.
Right, right, yeah. So, you know, and McLaurin wants to be the one in this.
Oh, he definitely wants to be on the play. It's a whole turn advantage.
All right, so McLaurin starts on the play, game one of the finals.
Right.
Turn three, Rabble Master. This is good. But he got stuck with no white mana. That was bad. Ari ends up sticking a Rhino, and then a second, and then Ari wins 1-0 very quickly. So Ari up 1-0. Game two, McLaurin's on the play again. Both players mull to six. McLaurin plays a turn three Mantis Rider.
Seems like
a turn five Stoke. Right, and the turn five Stoke comes, and it just ends up giving him a commanding lead. And he uses Jeskai Charms to finish it. This ties everything up. This puts Ari on the play. So now McLaurin, you know, his side.
Ari on the play for best of three.
Hey, what did you think of the hand Ari kept that game? I kind of felt it was.
I don't know how it gets much better going to five. That's kind of where I was like, eh. I mean, how does it get much
that's
better?
That's valid. It's a best of five, too, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can take a little bit of risk. A little
I mean, he stole one of the games. Like, he won on the other team's home court by winning game one.
Yeah, rope serve.
So, I mean, like, he's in a good spot already. So, I don't know. I don't think it mattered too much. And again, he's playing a mid-range deck that realistically, like, going to five could hurt.
Yeah, you need, I mean, your cards are all value, but it's not like your deck is just full of two-for-ones like a John Deckvold where you can just, you know, get out of five. All
yeah, time. I mean, especially playing against Burn, like, you go to five, and if you have to wait a few turns to play your first thing,
yeah.
You're in trouble.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, game three, Ari's on the play. Ari gets a turn three Siege Rhino. Yes, I said turn three Siege Rhino.
Yeah, I love that carry. It, did.
It gets quickly banished.
Good. That's the best card he can have for it.
But then Ari just says, I'll play another.
they do. They travel in pairs. They travel in flocks.
Yeah.
Flocks of rhinos.
And then he goes, you know what? I'm going to play in a Johnny, and I'm going to look at four cards, and I'm going to get an Elspeth from that. And then I'm going to play a Thoughtseize, and I'm going to take your Jeskai Charm. And then I'm going to play a Sorin.
Sequence. That's a powerful sequence of players.
yeah. So obviously Ari is up 2-1. So, McLaurin is now on the play. That puts him into, you know, probably a more commanding spot. He sideboards back to his I'm on the play plan. Rabble Masters come back in. I'm no longer a control deck. So, turn two, McLaurin plays a Revoker. He names Caryatid.
Wow.
Yeah, it got blighted. And then a very boring sequence of turns happens. And I hate to say it like that, but it was like, I play land, go. I play land, go. I play land, go. I play land, go. Do I burn that? No, I play land, go. It was a lot of that. But then, Ari does play a Sorin. That ends up getting dissolved, okay? A dig follows for McLaurin. And, I mean, it's looking good for McLaurin.
Looks real good here.
Then Ari, he draws a Siege Rhino with McLaurin just having enough burn to win, okay? So he plays the Siege Rhino, just putting him out of reach. I mean, he was at 11 life. McLaurin had 11 burn in his hand. If the Siege Rhino does not come off the top, we go to game five for sure. But Ari followed that with a Wingmate Rock that had been raided.
Oh, boy. That's how the comeback happened. Happens.
So Ari's at one. Lauren's sitting there looking at his deck. I was right about the Elspeth thing. That was actually in the semis where
oh,
he
was
spammed it?
It. Oh, my bad.
Yeah. So McLaurin sits there and he draws his top card and he like doesn't flip it. He doesn't even look at it. He pulls it off the top. He sets it down because it just has to be a little bit of burn. And if there's one thing his deck has, it's a whole fuck ton of burn.
Oh, he slow rolled it. He slow rolled it.
And Ari's only at one. How hard could this be?
But if he survives to the next turn, it's pretty clear he will win.
Well, the Wingmate Rock turned out to be pretty goddamn important when he flipped that thing over and he saw a Mantis Rider giving Ari the win, because he did show him double Abzan Charm. He's like, look what I got. Double Abzan Charm. Like, he starts counting everything. He's like, look. Yeah, I mean, this is game. That's
good. I have exactly lethal. Yeah. No, it's true. I kept these Abzan Charms around to be burn spells, I promise.
Yeah, and I mean, he plus one the creatures he needed to, and Ari wins this 3-1. Congratulations to him. there was some speak over the weekend on the Twitters and on the Facebook, all by me.
Kid from Michigan, you know, awesome.
Yeah, about, you know, his play style as a player, but you know what? Wait, I will say this, in the top eight, you get some leeway. You do get to act a little out of sync because it's very important.
Yeah. Any advantage should be taken when it's that serious.
We'll go deeper into this, though, next week.
Yeah, it sounds like a wonderful idea for maybe a topic.
Yeah, but as far as this week goes, there's just not enough time. But congratulations to him. Ryan, why don't you, I know you have a fuck ton of numbers that you bring on decks when we do these pro tours.
Yeah.
What showed up? What are the numbers? Give me the breakdown.
I mean, we just want to look more at day two because that's really kind of.
Yeah, let's talk at the winner's metagame.
So, all right, day two, basically, Just Guy was the most represented with 24.2% of the field. So,
now you said Jeskai. I need to ask, is that all forms of Jeskai?
No, no, Jeskai wins.
Jeskai wins.
Okay.
Yeah. Abzan mid-range.
All players were on it.
Abzan mid-range was at 17% of the field with 38 decks, day two. Jeskai Ascendancy, that was a surprise. The third most played archetype, day two.
A couple pretty serious teams on it.
Yeah, it was, managed to get roughly, you know, 6.75% of the field. From there on, everything's, you know, pretty similar. We got some black-green devotion. That was a bit of a surprise. I thought black-red was, green-red devotion was a bit stronger, but.
The Eidolon engine, I think, edges it out in the grindy matches.
Yeah, and Doomwake is really good right now against everyone trying to run Rabble Master and stuff, so. Mardu Midrange, that was a deck that was pretty well represented. Blue-Black Control, Green Devotion, and then finally looks like we got Sadisi Whip and Esper Control rounding out the top 10.
Okay, do you have numbers on how they fared against each other?
Sorry, Unwritten Devotion rounded out our top 10 with,
Unwritten, that's the, Masashi Iso deck.
Okay.
Is that what it is?
It's green blue. It's actually green blue devotion with See the Unwritten and Doomwake Giant. It's awesome. It's a sweet list. Like it's like everything you want plus, and it kind of has a dig through time of its own.
Yeah. The strongest deck, though, clearly Just Guy and Abzan. They had real high conversion rate too. Day one, Just Guy had 77 decks, and there was still 54 of them left. Day two, that's very good.
Pretty good.
Abzan had 60 day one, and 38 showed up day two, so also not bad either.
Yeah, also pretty good.
Yeah, Just Guy Ascendancy had a very high conversion rate. 21 day one, 15 showed up day two.
That's awesome. That's pretty good.
Very good. And Blue Black Control had a conversion rate of 75%. So
wow,
really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. I didn't know the deck. Is that good?
Let's see. Blue Black Control had 16 day one and 12 were still around day two. The players playing it were clearly good.
Well, yeah, that, and like, if that's how large the sample size was, there were only two teams with it. There was only the Channel Fireball Pantheon team and the Czech team.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the biggest, loser was really Mardu, you know, not really showing up day two. Nykthos decks kind of fell off, day two. Control clearly seemed to be pretty good day two. It was pretty, Esper had a good, you know.
It's probably more indicative of the Pro Tour than anything else.
Yeah, the pros like their.
And even then, it's not like the Jeskai deck is really a control deck. Like, to be fair, it is very, very angry.
Yeah, but Black-Blue is.
Yeah, but that's only 12 players.
Yeah, yeah, there's not a large sample size there.
Exactly.
It's like one team, so yeah.
Yeah, two teams, what's up?
Yeah.
Okay. Any more numbers you want to share with us, Ryan?
Nothing too exciting. So. Okay.
Then the top five cards of the tournament were Jeskai Ascendancy. Shocking.
Shocking.
You just heard him talk about it ad nauseum. Jeskai Ascendancy, number five.
It's a real card.
Trail of Mystery. This was really big in the limited portion.
Ari Lox went 3-0 with a Trail of Mystery deck.
Yeah, you just don't pass them because when you flip cards up, that creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn, and usually when you're flipping morph creatures, they're already getting bigger.
I was asleep on this card. I didn't realize that it's a full archetype. I guess you just like play all of the cheap morph guys that don't get the real value toughness, the reveals and all that stuff as much as you can.
Like play one white and it flips for one five. Yeah.
Play five colors.
Yep.
And you have all the basics, so you don't even really need to stress getting your dual lands. Just get your Trail of Mysteries, make sure you get a secret plans, and then like just win the game late. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Really is. Mantis Rider 3, because we said there's
everywhere.
It's a good card.
It's so awesome. Like, for someone who loved Lightning Angel back in the day, it's just so sweet.
Yeah. Dig Through Time at number 2, so if you wanted them cheap, you should have did it.
Holy crap, that card's good. I knew it was good. I didn't realize how good it was.
I knew it was good, too. I mean, I've luckily cracked a lot of them, but man. Yeah. Siege Rhino, number 1, because like Ryan said earlier, if you get turn 3 Siege Rhino, turn 4 Siege Rhino, you win.
Yeah. Very good.
That's just how that works.
I mean, it's funny. I feel like we're definitely ready for some control coming out. A lot of mid-range coming up, so we'll see.
Right. A little sad announcement as I woke up this morning. It might not be sad. I know it's not sad to Ryan. Zach Hill is leaving the coverage team to focus more on his nonprofit organization. So he'll no longer be there bothering you during coverage. Go ahead, get out your hurrahs now. Do it. Okay. All right.
There you go.
Did you get him out?
Yeah.
Okay. Now you're back to the show. All right. Good. I was more talking to the people who was listening. Because I know there's somebody out there in their car going, yeah, and I don't want him to miss the next one.
No, he's not too bad. He's a reasonable dude.
He seems like a really good guy.
He's intelligent. I appreciate his views or how he understands the game, but he's a little out there.
Yeah, I don't know. Myself, like, he seems like a good guy. He seems like somebody I would drink with, but he's not a person that I want telling me what's going on during a pro tour because he repeats a lot of stuff. He's kind of scatterbrained in it.
Yeah, it's true. Great writer.
He looks like Sudcliffe's excited little kid.
Yeah. You gotta go back and read his Chatter of the Squirrel articles though, Ryan. He really is one of the better Magic authors of all time.
I don't mind the guy, just his coverage to me is just unbearable. It's
know what? Randy Bueller is back on the coverage team, locking it down.
I love Randy Bueller.
Dude, Randy Bueller, oh my god, I love me some Randy Bueller. Randy Bueller you know, whatever his co-host name is, can't think of it, Brian, whatever.
Brian David Marshall?
Thank you, BDM. I kept thinking BBD, and I'm like, I know that's wrong.
The only problem with that is, like, Rich Hagon has been just exited to the desk until the finals.
That's fine.
And I love Rich Hagon.
He's okay. I like him. I mean, I think Rich and Randy could do a good job together.
Yeah, Rich is doing a fine job where he's at, and somebody does need to crunch him numbers and everything.
I like him at the desk, man. He's a great anchor.
He is. Yep. But, you know, I miss him, and I don't realize how much I miss him in coverage until we get to the finals and him and LSV are sitting there just bouncing pun after pun off of each other. It's just like, I'm not a huge pun fan, but when those two get going, it's hilarious.
I just want to say, coverage is great these days. You know, it's really, really awesome for how much in depth they do. You know, getting to watch every single match in the top eight and you know, the team that they've assembled, the amount of quality they have on their sets these days, it's really awesome to see.
Yeah, I find it hilarious every time I like hop on Twitter during a pro tour and people are complaining about how bad the coverage is, and it's like, you should have watched this shit 5 years ago.
You should have watched it in 2000, bro.
Like, this was like the 2006 tournament me and Will was talking about earlier in Honolulu. Go back and watch that and then see how far they've come.
Yeah,
and it's just, holy hell, it's so much better. And back then, they didn't do replays either. So if the tournament started at 3 a.m., you got up at 3 a.m. or you stayed up all night long.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it used to be a party. Like, you know, it'd be like, okay, yeah, I got the tournament over here. You know, you'd go over with your case of beer or, you know, something. You'd have chips and shit to eat while you just, like, four or five guys would just sit there and watch Magic all night.
Peachy watching draft party.
Yeah, did a couple of those. Those were fun. It was like a reason to get together. And you got together at some very strange times. Especially when they were, like, over in Europe. You're just like, oh, fuck. I got to get me... It starts at 2 a.m.
Yeah, hey, you come over to my house at 4 a.m. and then we'll be up until about, you know, 7 or 8.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can go home, you know, yeah. Okay, so we're going to find out a lot more this weekend when this is completely released at a game show. But Magic the Gathering made a board game.
I'm very excited. I'll probably buy this.
I want to see what it is. We're not going to find out more until this week, but they did announce it during the Pro Tour, so I wanted to bring this up. I mean, dude, this could, and I'm thinking it's going to be a quick release because you'd want this out for Christmas.
You definitely want it for Christmas, for sure. It's probably fully developed and ready to go, already printed. They're just going to unload it, you know, in November.
Right, right. Absolutely. I mean, I think it's going to be cool to, I'll probably get one of these, honestly. Just, I mean, I have my board game pile. I mean, it's not as impressive as some people's that I know, but
no.
I mean, like, me and Will's friend Steve, I mean, his board game
pile is very impressive.
My board game pile is not that impressive, but like, I got what I need. I got my Yahtzee, I got my Risk, I got a couple other games, you know?
this could round out my five or my ten. Absolutely, you know?
Right. But guys, we got an email, and I feel this is one we can go over. This comes from Brad Van Hook. And it says, Hi guys, I love the new direction of the show. Good stuff. We have been revealing little things about the show and, you know, more's to come. Anywho, here's my query. And I read that exactly how you wrote
query.
That.
Query.
Now, I'm no pro touring top aiding money making player, but I've noticed that CVM is always borrowing cards and decks, almost to the point where it seems like it's not worthy of the reputation he has. I mean, how can you trot around the country winning and putting your articles in the face everywhere MTG can be found if all you're doing is playing an entire deck you borrowed from someone on Twitter? I'm over here brewing and sweating over these lists when I could just be borrowing a winning deck and be done with it. I don't know. I know I shouldn't be talking, but his status as an awesome player / brewmaster is a bit overrated in my mind. That's all I got. Thank you for letting me rant. Brad, here's the thing. With CVM borrowing those decks, I look at it as it's that much more impressive that he does well.
Yeah, can I take this one? I actually borrow a lot of decks.
I mean, yeah, you can say what you gotta say. I'll say what I gotta say. Ryan can say what he gotta say about it. But go ahead, Will.
Yeah, as someone, I'm not entirely sure about CVM if he's borrowing people's lists or if he's borrowing cards that, you know, it's his own list, whatever, either way. But when you borrow someone else's list, like the decks are never the way you would build a 75, especially in the sideboard and all that stuff. It's in a lot of ways, it's a hindrance more than it's a favor. Like, but for me, I don't have the financial resources to dedicate to playing in any format of Magic other than the draft format. So to be able to, I mean, CVM is not that guy, right? He obviously has access to cards, but you know, as a way to get your foot in the door to tournaments, I think it's great, but it is more of a detriment than you think when you go to your sideboard and don't see the card you want to.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know for a fact that when you have time to play a list repeatedly,
yeah, you're just going to get better.
You're going to do better with it, and yep. Like I said, I think it's more impressive that he can borrow these decks.
Pick up a deck and just play it. Play the wheels off it right away.
Okay. Yeah. I gotta interject. You guys, all right. Does anyone know who CVM is?
Yeah, I realize that my excuse is not the same as CVM's.
CVM played the same deck and played the same deck. He played Jund Monsters and Green Red Monsters for the last, since Theros came out. It's all he
was playing Reanimator.
He's not one to switch back and forth from decks, and this, I don't know who, I've never in my life heard CVM referred to as a brewmaster. I don't know where that comes from. Doing versus videos does not make you a brewmaster. You're taking decks at 4-0 dailies, and then they're testing them, for our enjoyment. They're not brewmasters. They're not brewing anything. They're not saying, this is what CVM is.
Those guys in Star City Games have a pretty substantial pull over the Magic audience, and he's kind of one of their flagship, you know, amateur players right now, and he definitely writes articles about deck building.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, and like, he does the whole breakdowns with other people, but to be realistic, like, I'm not even looking at this necessarily as CVM specifically.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this question more as people who borrow cards and do well.
I think it's a lot more impressive when you can just pick up a deck and play it to finishes. There is a lot of skill that goes into playing this game of Magic. A lot of that you have to repeat to do.
Yeah, I mean,
he has the access, and he's at that point.
It's not about him, though. It's
yeah, don't necessarily look at it as CVM.
No. I'm saying, but if we had a sponsor that we could get any card from we wanted just by giving them a phone call, we would do the same thing. We wouldn't buy the card.
Well, let me tell you something, Ryan. If you play this game long enough and you're a nice enough person, you can develop these resources.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need a store to back you up. Even, you know, everyone has a friend with a giant collection. So.
Yeah, I mean, I borrow cards all the time. I have a giant collection myself. I'm just saying, if I got to that point, like a lot of these players get to that point where they have, you know, they can just call up Star City Games and get the deck. It doesn't mean they're not familiar with the cards They don't necessarily want to travel with them and stuff. And they have, you know, they could just go to the table at SCG and get their deck, pick it up.
Okay, yeah, fine. I mean, but.
like he said, I'm not looking at it even as somebody who's getting that. I'm looking at it as people who borrow decks, because like he writes, you know, I'm over here brewing and sweating over these lists when I could just be borrowing a winning deck and be done with it. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win.
I'd rather have my own brew.
I mean, like if you want to borrow a winning deck, I mean, you might go there and do well with it, but if you don't borrow that winning deck for week after week after week, you're not going to play it as optimally.
Yeah, the nuance,
optimally as
you want. It's going to be harder.
I keep getting interrupted.
My bad.
I've tried to, you know, get my point out for the last 10 minutes, and every time someone's interrupting me. Go ahead, Ryan.
No, man. I was just saying, like, the guy, there's a difference. We're equating not owning the card to lack of knowledge of cards. Just because you borrow the deck doesn't mean you're not knowledgeable about the cards or what's in the deck or don't know what you're picking up or getting into. You don't just say, oh, just throw a deck at me. You probably ask your friend, hey, do you have that blue-black deck I can borrow, or, you know.
Yeah, but even then, that list is not the same 75 that your play style wants. You know?
Yeah, like, but if you know the cards and go over the list, I mean, you could be all right. You don't have to own the cards to have knowledge of them.
Yeah, but it's not, you don't have the same level of nuance as you would if you're, you know, practicing week in and week out with the same list.
Sure, and that's, and CVM does so. So he's a bad example for this question, I think, because he plays the same list week in.
Well, not, I mean, he changes.
That's why I've been saying since the beginning, ignore that. I shouldn't even mention the name CVM because I knew somebody would just focus right in on that.
But,
Ryan, the hell have you been up to? I'm done with this question.
Angelo,
thanks for the email there, man. I'm bad with names, I'm sorry.
Angelo, if you ever need to borrow a deck, just let me know, man. I got you. You play online, too. A lot of people that borrow decks play online. And if you want to go to a paper tournament, you don't have the collection, you need a deck daddy as well.
It is very expensive to hold two collections.
Yeah.
I can let you
know. It's very expensive to hold one collection, dude.
Yeah, and to add a second one on top of it. It is very expensive to do that. So, like, I fully understand it. Like, I mean, if you play online and you get your grinding in there, but then it comes time where you have a GP and you can't walk in with a GP, flop your laptop down and go, I'm going to use these, you use those.
Right.
It just doesn't work that way. So
we're unbanning this. We're unbanning deck borrowing.
I guess. Yeah. I mean, if that's how we're going to do it. Anyway, Ryan, what the hell have you been up to?
Dude, I'm just up to my neck in deck list and trying to, you know, play some new stuff, a lot of new I've been playing a lot of Magic, so I love this format. I wanted to draft this last Friday, didn't get to. They had 24 guys. If I signed up, I would have been the awkward dude that fucked everything up, so.
Right. That probably would have been the case anyway.
Do you know how you can draft whenever you want?
MTGO.
Ha
ha! Yeah, that's fair, but
it's funny how much your opinion of that changes after you have a computer that runs it, Angelo.
No, I'm still upset.
I'm working on a Jeskai deck list right now. I like this. I like Sarkhan. I like the Jeskai stuff I saw over the weekend. I like Abzan a bunch, so just kind of building the gauntlet, you know, trying to be ready. So,
sweet. Anything else?
Working my ass off, that's about it, bro. And Cast from Exile on SoundCloud right now, working out the shit with MTG Cast, so page information and stuff, but we're good to go. Check us out, Cast from Exile on SoundCloud, been on that, so that's about it, man.
Alright, cool. Will, what you been up to?
You know, I've been playing a lot of Magic, in real life, a couple drafts, a lot of Magic, and pretty much a draft every day on Modo. Trying a lot of different strategies, lots of two color, a little bit of five color, and all the threes, you know, just working through it all, and, you know, built some decks that I thought were pretty saucy, so that's sweet. I feel like I'm, you know, really preparing well for the winter season. Aside from that, unfortunately had to say goodbye to my roommate Kevin as he went away for a year for his third DUI, which is a super bummer.
Mm.
Is this the guy that peed in the living room?
No, he still lives here. That's Tank. So this is, We moved him out on Thursday, and then we shipped the new one in on Saturday because we like the cheap rent. So got my buddy Mike living in now, which is sweet. So
that's a pretty quick turnover.
Well,
did you have him waiting on the list or something?
No, it was actually that, you know, he kind of became pretty homeless pretty quick. So you know, it was a fortunate occurrence. So that's cool.
Like how you said, fortunate for you.
Well, I mean, it's really fortunate for him because he, like, I mean, he lived in the city. He's a city kid.
it, you know. So he's like out in the county now. He's like he thinks it's the country, you know. It's crazy. So
I understand that completely. It took me years to realize that this was not the country.
I guess. I mean, there's country out there.
You're not in the boonies.
There's boons in this world. Go to Missouri, you know. So, but you know, I've been doing that and just kind of been taking care of my girlfriend who's still sick. It's her third different illness. Now she's throwing up everywhere, which is, you know, awesome. So,
has she been to the doctors and stuff?
No, not yet, because you know
she's been sick for a week.
She's been sick for 3 weeks, dude. She's
time to get her to the doctor.
Well, she's been doodled. She's been calling the state, dealing with health insurance issues. It's complicated.
Oh man.
Yeah. So, you know that it's happening, but that's fine. That's pretty. No, all things considered, it's pretty minor. But got my driver's license back last week.
Woohoo!
Which is pretty awesome. I have to renew it though, unfortunately. So this, you know, waiting around for the paperwork to do that, and then next week I'm off to go buy me a little pickup truck and do that deal. So that's sweet. You know, yeah. get this job thing going and
make sure this is cool.
Thank you.
Just letting you know, you don't want to end up in a ditch while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to end up in a ditch anyway, but the illegality of the car definitely helped to put it in the ditch. That's for damn sure. So, you know, but, you know, getting ready, planning to play some Sealed for game day this Saturday.
Sealed game day.
Yeah, Sealed game day. Pimping it out for Titan Games up there in Hopewell, Beaver County, Pennsylvania. Check it out. Sealed game day. Sealed game day.
That's got me interested.
Now that I'm talking about that as well, we got a Grand Prix trial coming up at also at Titan Games. It's for Grand Prix New Jersey, Edmonton, coming up in November. So it's a legacy Grand Prix trial, and you know, should be pretty sweet. Should get some pretty fierce competition coming down from both the, you know, the Eastern Ohio area and hopefully some of the Mr. Nice Guy Games guys from, you know, the city itself are going to come down and spike it out. So pretty excited for that.
Sweet.
But that's about it. What are you up to, Ange?
Well, you kind of stole my thunder. I got my computer.
That's so awesome.
That's partially why I miss notes on a few of the days, because, you know, you have to wait for them to load this and load that onto the computer. And, like, I was stuck at the store for a lot longer than I expected to be. But I got a great deal.
Yeah?
Oh, dude, a great deal. So I got an Acer computer. It's a laptop.
Right now, these days.
Yeah, it's a laptop. It's... like Will said, it's not a bad brand at all.
Yeah.
I did get it at Walmart, won't lie. So, you know, it makes you think it might not be a good... No, dude, listen. I got 8 gigabytes of RAM.
That's a solid amount.
1 terabyte hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Touch screen, 17-inch.
Wow.
Windows 8, $350.
Holy shit.
Yeah, boy.
That's pretty similar specs to the desktop I have from 2008, but the difference between desktop and laptops is very relevant. That's a really good price. $350?
Yeah.
That's good.
It was $550 marked down to $450 because of they quit carrying it,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So then when they got down to, like, the last 5 that they had in the store, they marked it down to, like, $395. And I had all kinds of time to talk to the clerk about, you know, why it was so cheap. So this is how I know this. It got marked down to $395.
Yeah, because you see something that cheap, you're like, I don't know.
Right. And plus, I just needed small talk.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so, you know, it's $395, sweet. And that's what I thought I was paying, you know. I was like, yeah, I'm going to pay the $395. That's still a good price for that. Like, I had no problem with that. But I got the last one.
Oh, goddamn it.
So
that was my next
question.
So it was
the display model.
That's even better.
So they knocked another 10% off of that.
Wow.
And I was like, $350 for a computer. Like, I took that extra money and went and bought, you know, Civ 5 Ultimate.
Oh, I thought, man, you know, the new Civ comes out in 10 days.
Yeah, I am aware. Whether or not I'll pick that up, because I still got to, like, play Civ 5. I may just download it off of Steam.
The new one?
Yeah.
You should get it. We should all get it in battle.
That's an idea. It definitely is. Winter is coming, right?
Yeah, winter's coming.
So. Because of that, I did get to grind some MTGO this week. And it's amazing how my win percentage goes up when I'm not being rushed by a clock. I was in the finals of every draft I got in this weekend. I tried a bazillion different fucking
archetypes. You can do anything.
Just play right.
I played this awesome red-green deck. I got a pack through Starkin to really, you know, solidify it, but like just awesome, not expected deck at all, you know?
Yeah, like I won with a Teemer deck. I got to the finals with the Jeskai deck. The Jeskai deck was better than the Teemer deck. It just, you know, opponents work out the way they do, you know.
Sometimes your opponent's decks are better, and sometimes your mana just does odd things. You know, it's Modo.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, it's just like, man, I mean, immediately my win percentage goes through the roof. So it's like, that's crazy. And then, like, I'm also, you know, prepping to, you know, basically be the everything at my house for the next few months. So that's going to be a little rough on me. Wife's going in for surgery. She ain't going to be able to walk for like 3 months. Wow.
I was hoping that wasn't going to have to happen.
No, it has to happen. So
it's a bummer.
You know, I'm going to have to do everything. Work, come home, clean, do dishes, you know, make sure all the laundry's done, you know, cut grass, do everything. Yeah, so that's going to be very time sapping on
that's
me.
That's a fun one.
Yeah, better but, for you know, she's going to be out of pain in a few months. So I guess I just have to tell myself that and live through, you know, the hard stuff now. Just is what it is, man. Shout outs. I got one for Chris Lancey. He's going to lend me a deck here soon, and that's going to be great. And aside from that, I don't really have any. I guess shout outs to Walmart for hooking me up with a cheap fucking computer.
Boo.
And I hate shouting out big giant corporations.
Boo.
Cheap
price, yeah, that's good. That's a really good deal. That's a phenomenal computer price. Good job. Good dick. Good dick, sir.
So, Will, you got any shout-outs?
I actually have a bunch of shout-outs this week. I even wrote them down. I want to give a shout-out to Buttercup because he bought a box of cards and let us all draft it. Shout out to the Beckman boys. Good hanging out with those guys. Shout out to Ryan Tice, who beat me for the first time ever in a sanctioned Magic event on Friday night in the finals of our draft, or actually in round four of the draft. You know, after the top eight, or after the top, you know, whatever. Fuck it. Bummer. Fuck you. Birthday shout out to Maxwell Reed. Happy birthday, Max.
Happy birthday, Max. Ryan, you got any shout outs?
Yeah, happy birthday, Max. That's what's up. Shout out the posse as usual. Shout out Greg O'Greensea for just throwing shit at
me. Are you fucking serious? You give him a shout out for that?
It's just funny to me. That just cracked.
Dude, that's a slop, man.
Yeah, it's a bad thing on his part. That's why I'm shouting out, just because it made me laugh. Like, I don't know. I thought that was ridiculous. Yeah, shout out to the new people on the Facebook page, and yeah, keep coming. That's what's up. Shout out to Ruben, Sid, and Matt, and everyone over at Cast from Exile as well. So yeah,
damn, you don't like your show anymore.
Maybe we could try. Hey, did you guys know about the Cast from Exile? I hear it's a pretty sweet happening spot on the interwebs.
Hey Ryan, if people want to get a hold of you, how could they do so?
The Facebook Posse page, man. Of course. FitEmps Podcast.
Okay.
And Twitter, Bro the Yan. Get at me. Come on. If Helene Bourgeot is following me, you guys got no excuse out there. So get on that shit.
Okay. I know there's one more way they can get a hold of you or hear you. So go ahead. Get it out.
Yeah, of course, Cast from Exile and Cast from Exile Facebook page. Get on there as well.
Okay. Will, if you wanted to get a hold of you, how would you do so?
Well, man, they can't get a hold of me at Cast from Exile. I'm also on the PitEmps Podcast Facebook page. I guess I'm on Facebook as well. I'm on Facebook, or I'm on the MTGO, under the name Will_Flaccid, FLACID. Feel free to hit me up if you want to jam popper, or maybe I can get some really bad standard deck put together in a hurry. So, you know, I got that going. What about you, Inch?
If you want to get a hold of me, you can get a hold of me at GonkSuo on Twitter and on MTGO. Also at pitimpodcast@gmail.com for something a little more long form.
Is there a Pit Imps Guild on MTGO?
Yes, there is a Pit Imps Guild or group or whatever in the fuck we're called.
Tribe?
I don't know.
Tribe?
Sure, we're Tribe. But yeah, you can get a hold of me there. Send me a message. I've been on MTGO a little bit more, obviously. Send me a message. I'll put you right into the group. Again, you can send that message to GonkSuo. Here you go, Will. This is just for you.
Ooh!
GanKSuou.
Wow, that's so sweet.
So, yeah, send that to me, and I'll, you know, put you right into the group real quick. Aside from that, yeah, that's how you can get a hold of me. Next week, we're going to go over Grand Prix Los Angeles, which will be standard. SCG Wooster.
Wooster!
And we are going to have a topic of play etiquette next week. This should get fairly heated. I know me and Will look at how you should play this game completely different.
Yeah, we're gonna get some battling going. It'll be fun.
Yeah, so it should be fairly interesting to listen to. And Ryan can play moderator. Like, that will help.
Ryan is definitely a moderate individual.
But until next week.
Hey, fuck yeah, Scandinavia.
Man, Scandinavia is so cool.
Today I learned Ryan is in the Bears. Have a good one. Go fuck yourself.